Councilmember Eugene Connors?
Here.
Councilmember Joan Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Shirley Dowdy?
Present.
Mayor Ron Ertley?
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Anna Klein?
Here.
Councilmember Douglas Dunn?
Here.
Councilmember Serena Sullivan?
Here.
City staff Justin Johnson, City Manager, Ashley Coronado, City Clerk, Sharon Bono, Finance Director, Ben Reno, Police Chief, Tom Klimek, Public Works Director, Robert Coronado, Sergeant at Arms, Ann Carl, City Attorney.
Thank you very much for the invocation. Let us turn our thoughts to all of the people throughout history who have fought to bring equality, justice, and freedom to all people. The struggle is long and it's difficult and will one day be achieved for all the peoples of the planet. And so for all of the people throughout the centuries who gave their lives to this cause, let's have a moment of silence. Thank you. Let us stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Quick announcement without objection from the council. Public Works is asked to pull item number 15 from the agenda. We now have a call to the public. We have a few people signed up. We'll start with Donna Pulling.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Donna Pulling, and I live in the city of Bisbee. And at the call, I would like to just address the last item on the agenda because I don't want to stay around for the whole meeting. And the last item on tonight's agenda is the consideration of the appointment of Ann Carl and continuing as our city attorney. And I want to give a recommendation that the council does retain Ms. Carl, despite the fact that there was a bit of a mix-up at the December 16th meeting, and I did file a complaint to the Attorney General about that possible violation of the open meeting law. I do believe that Ann has the highest ethical and conscientious interest in preserving our right as citizens of Bisbee to address our council and to protect us. I think it would be wise for us to continue using her service. Thanks.
Next we have Alice Hammers.
My name is Alice Hammers, and I live at 7391 North Frontier Road, McNeil, Arizona. I guess what I don't feel that I'd like to address, I guess, 3 and 4. I don't feel that we really worked on the Stone Garden. I would really like to see us cooperate fully and really have us all understand fully not only the pensions and everything, but what actually Stone Garden has accomplished for us. I don't think that was ever discussed that I recall. But I feel like we really need to explore. You know, to make a community, this is something we have to explore difficult issues. And to vote on this tonight, I feel, would be rash. I think it would be done without the consideration, without enough consideration, that would be. And then I am appalled at the amount of money Homeland Security has. Those are my tax dollars. I would like them see them go to schools, to the infrastructure of this city. I mean, the amount of money is, you have to wipe your forehead. I know, because my dad worked as a military subcontractor. I know what kind of money they have. because I saw him make money he never should have made. So, and I'm grateful. I understand why you want the money, because I did too. I took it, but and so did my dad. But, let's really consider if this is the best program for our police, for our community. Anyway, thanks.
Thank you. Marie Miner.
Hi, Marie Miner, living in the Briggs neighborhood. Probably by now some of you wonder, why in the world do I always keep coming up and talking to groups, especially at the city council meetings? And I just wanted to give you a little bit of background that might put that in perspective. The motivation for my being a watchdog is, especially in terms of city governance, comes from my mother's life. She was a German Jew who barely escaped from Germany to America at age 17. Mom lived through a Nazi dictatorship, and I'm keeping a vigilant eye so that it doesn't happen here. There was an important line in the Sounds of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel, and it goes, which is, I have come to doubt all that I once held was true. And this is kind of a revelation that I'm speaking about, because all too often when city officials and city employees talk to me, I've been gullible, and I'm sorry for having been gullible. We can't always believe when a city employee is stating that they're an engineer or that they possess a certain degree. That isn't always true. Just in the recent selection of the Bisbee City Manager, prior to our good choice of Justin Johnson, this city government had to retract an offer to a candidate when more background data proved that we'd made a mistake. So I'm just saying to everyone, we all have to do more diligence in selecting and electing city managers and city officials. A newspaper article doesn't always contain the whole truth. I'm just going to say in summary, we have to check out information that is given to us. And I pledge that I'll make more of an effort not to be so gullible.
Thank you. Right. Next person will be Maggie Kuhanek.
Hi, this is Maggie Kuhanek. I live in Bisbee. And you did that very well with my last name, Mayor Ertl. Did I say
that's close.
Still did it wrong. Darn it.
I take them all.
Sorry. I just have two things. I definitely want to speak up at the time when you are trying to work on ratifying the Stone Garden issue, so I'm not going to talk about that now. I have definite issues with that. But the two things I would like to really recommend that this city continue with Ann Carl. I think she's an amazing person and very adequate for what we need, more than adequate. I appreciate her work so far. And also, I don't know how cool this is to do, but I'm wondering about the appointment, number F, approval of Susan Blackford to the Municipal Property Corporation, in the fact that if she's a real estate agent, does that make there a conflict of interest in that appointment? So those are the two things. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Grady Meadows. Did you want to do call? Yeah. Okay.
Hi, my name is Grady Meadows. I live on High Road in Old Bisbee. This is about supporting Ann Carl. I'm head of president of Rebuilding Together, and she has worked on every Rebuilding Together job we've had every year. And I come onto the job site, and she is unbelievably hardworking and never complains, and oftentimes does the crappiest job, and roofing, and she's an amazingly talented woman, extremely skilled, and very knowledgeable. All the questions we've always asked her and brought to her attention, the legal issues, she's been there with very clear and concise explanation for it and answers. She's kind and considerate, and just the most amazing representative for Bisbee. And I think we're so privileged to have her. She's just a wonderful human being, just the best. So that's it. And I expect to get more work out of her for Rebuilding Together next.
Thank you. Was there any other person want to speak at Call to the Public? I think that was it. Item number one, accounts payable. Do we have a motion?
I move that we pay accounts payable in the amount of $286,880.32.
Second.
We have a motion.
I saw they signed up for the Call to the Public, but it's possible I signed in the wrong place.
I didn't have your name here.
I put transparency next to my name.
Well, it doesn't say call to the public, and we're already a motion and a second in an agenda item. I would recommend maybe talk on item number 3 or number 4, perhaps. That might work. Okay. And you can give a note to these. I've modified people wanting to speak a little bit in the sense that just pass up a note to Sergeant-at-Arms, Officer Coronado, and he'll pass it on down the line to me, and I'll put you on that list. We have a motion and a second to approve accounts payable in the amount of $286,880.32. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 2, approval of the consent agenda. A, approval of the minutes of the regular session of Marin Council held on January the 6th, 2014 at 7 p.m. B, approval of the minutes of the joint work session of Marin Council and iBisbee Committee held on January the 6th, 2014 at 5:30 p.m. C, approval of the resignation of Pauline Sherman from the Bisbee Arts Commission. D, approval of the resignation of Abigail Hottel from the Youth Council. E, approval of the appointment of Keith Bogues to the Community Sustainability Commission. F, approval of the appointment of Susan Blackford to the Municipal Property Corporation. G, approval of the appointment of Harold Pace to the Streets and Infrastructure Committee. H, approval of the appointment of Rosalie Blessing to the Youth Council. I, approval of the appointment of Michael Donnelly to the Youth Council. J, approval of a special event liquor license application submitted by St. Patrick Church for an event to be held at 100 Quality Hill, Bisbee, Arizona on Saturday, February the 14th, 2015 from 7 p.m. till 12 a.m. midnight. K, approval of a special event liquor license application submitted by Friends of the Warren Ballpark for an event to be held at 300 Rupee Avenue, Bisbee, Arizona on Saturday, April the 11th, 2015 and Sunday, April the 12th, 2015 from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent agenda items A through K.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda items A through K. Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Ertley.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 3, ratification pursuant to ARS 38-431.05 of actions taken on December the 16th, 2014. The purpose of the item is to validate an earlier action by the Marin Council regarding Operation Stone Garden overtime and employee-related expenses. We have a few people signed up for this, and let's go through the list. Start off with Benny Scott, are you here?
My name is Benny Scott. I live in Ward 3, 513 Harrison Street. references Stone Garden. I was a police officer for 27 years. I wasn't privileged to this. I did RICO seizures and forfeitures and scrounged for a helmet like that. I'm not going to talk about all of the cars that they get and all of the good benefits that they're getting, but I've been watching the news and I talked to some people and I'm getting a little concerned. If we don't accept this, you're going to be short on some money anyway. One of them, if you watch your news, and it's come on the news twice, it's been in the newspaper, the governor of the state of Arizona plans on doing some cuts on your state revenue funds. That's money you're going to lose. Secondly, your gas is going down, yay, but you're not paying the same taxes. Your highway user fund, HERF, is going to get cut. Phoenix and Tucson are still working on their monorail between there. We're going to pay for it. Highway user fund, HERF, is going to not be so big this year. So my little recommendation, it's federal money, yes. If we don't take it, it doesn't go in the reserve. It goes to Douglas. It goes to Sierra Vista. It goes to Phoenix. It goes to Benson, Tombstone, Wilcox. If you've got a chance to take it, let's take it. Let's don't let it go, because if you turn it down, you won't have it again. It'll be gone. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Nicholas Knight.
Nicholas Knight, 306 Shattuck Street, Bisbee, Arizona. Thank you for your presentation. I appreciate that. Brought up all kinds of questions. I've already submitted some. Where are the P-25s going? Because I want to be there at the auction. It is unconscionable that if you're going to a trunk system as the sheriff's office did in Cochise County, and you are the grant, the grant administrators for this, you know this is coming down the pike. This doesn't happen 2 weeks out. And so for year after year to have them buying radios that are then not going to be applicable with the system that you're moving into was not a good thing. So that's a problem that I'd like to see kicked up to the sheriff's office also, along with when are you having the auction on all this equipment. Secondly, I really urge you to table this. I don't think the questions that the public needs on this are going to be answered tonight, clearly not in a call to the public format. I've got some pension questions that I'd like to be answered. Is the amount we get back from Stone Garden going to continue for all of the years that the person is retired? So if they've got 30 years that they're drawing as a retiree, are we as a city getting that money every year to pay the 64.7%? And if not, who pays for it? I'm still totally at sea about what we're actually on the hook for as far as pensions. Secondly, the vehicle expenses, I'm assuming when a third officer is out on Stone Garden, they're driving a Bisbee police vehicle? Okay, who pays all the attendant expenses with that? Who's paying the insurance? And is it prorated where we're getting that back from Stone Garden for the 8% of the time that it was on the road for that? Who's paying for the tire wear? Who's paying for the percentage of the oil change? Are we tracking all this stuff? That's all stuff that's coming out of the city Bisbee pocket, unless it's getting reimbursed by Stone Garden, and if not, why not, since we're using our equipment on it? It's wonderful to see us getting this new equipment. Some of it, I have to be honest with you, I don't necessarily agree with getting. As far as the slow creep of militarization, I see somebody in a ballistic helmet and tactical armor. And again, if I'm in a t-shirt, I agree with an earlier comment, who's going to get caught, who's going to get shot, and there's a whole mindset that comes with putting on body armor. And if you don't believe this, watch what happens in the Iron Man movies. And to walk down the street with something like that on changes your mindset and your interaction, and you're a lot less predisposed, perhaps, unless you've been properly trained, to interact in a very diplomatic fashion, as opposed to, you know, I can come down with force because I've got the better equipment. So that's a problem that I see coming from wearing this stuff, not necessarily the person underneath, but what happens when you put it on, in the same way that a judge changes their demeanor when they put on their robes and sit on the bench. or a Girl Scout changes her behavior when she puts on her uniform, or a Boy Scout. Clothes do things to you in that way. So I'd like to look into more of that a little bit. The other thing about this is, yes, it brings some goodies to Bisbee in terms of equipment. Yes, it brings money into the officers. But why am I here and why are most of you here? It's because Bisbee is a fantastic place to live with an incredible standard of living. And no, I don't believe in the fear crap that was getting pushed down our throats about how bad it is and if the hordes are at the gate, because I don't see the dust cloud from them shuffling around waiting for the gate to be open to come in. So I don't really think it's that bad. And if we need people to protect us like that, we have a big federal agency to do that called Border Patrol and Homeland Security. And I think that having somebody working 16 hours a week or 8 hours a week on one job and then their 40 hours on another is asking them to really split their interests. And if our officers feel like they want to be Border Patrol officers, I think they should both become Border Patrol officers. If they're City of Bisbee police officers, I want them focused on City of Bisbee police work. I don't want them tired or fatigued or having their mind elsewhere about how many shifts they're going to have later in the week because they've got this Stone Garden gig that they're doing on the side. Thank you.
Thank you. Peter Van Gumlach.
I'm Peter Van Gundlach, 327 McLaren Avenue, Bisbee. I think there's some misconceptions about Stone Garden that haven't been revealed completely or haven't been understood. And from my perspective anyway, the media generally doesn't give us a whole lot of information on what's going on in Mexico. I mean, I follow it daily, perhaps three or four times a day. There are things going on there that our media refuses to even discuss or talk about. That's one of the aspects that I see as a benefit of Stone Garden, in that our officers are engaged with elements that are outside of our city, and yet they impact our city, both beneficially and also as liabilities. The benefit is, of course, they come and interact with us, and they're all wonderful people, and we have stores to fulfill their needs and so forth. Yet on the other hand, if our police are sort of hybrids and they only understand the dynamics of Bisbee with all the love and flowers and all the rest of the ideologies that we promote here, they will not be prepared to handle those issues when they have to deal with folks that have no interest in the city of Bisbee, they're simply passing through. So I think that the Stone Garden offers opportunities of contact and opportunities of interaction that are very helpful to us directly. That's my statement.
Thank you. Alice Hammers?
I don't.
Mary Adams.
I'm Mary Adams, and I live in Brewery Gulch. And I would like to think that in some areas I represent the whole gulch. And we are very concerned, I think the right word is transparency. We have an ability in the Gulch to get vans, old cars that barely run, come together on the bus that comes at 5 o'clock in Old Bisbee. And we didn't know about the meeting about Operation Stone Garden. And I don't know enough details to be critical. I only know that in the future, we must not assume that everyone knows how to use a computer. We must assume that between 50 and 75 people eat in Gore Park every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And back when we had the hoopla la that started out with the Occupy movement and then started with the art house, we came together beautifully in a crisis. And we got to the meetings, and people who had never thought they could speak in public were eloquent. We may need a public relations director. I know that's expensive. We may need to look at job descriptions. Maybe someone could have their job of making flyers. Get them to me. Get them to Gore Park. People want to be involved. We know how terrible our voting record is. We know people don't vote. Get them involved and they'll vote. They ask me almost every day, why should I vote? I'm not involved. I don't know what's happening. We need to get them involved. Once they're involved, they'll vote. Right now, they don't think it's possible. I'm sorry I didn't sign up in the correct place. I don't know why I did that. I just know I'm sorry everyone was inconvenienced. I do want to say that the people I was referring to don't know what Operation Stone Garden is. I don't know enough. I haven't heard talk about the ethics or ideology of it. I need to hear a lot more talk about pensions, and I need to talk about the officers being tired. I need to talk about a lot more, and I want to say something very positive about our current police chief. He is so accessible. I called one day and had an appointment the following morning. Now, how often does that happen? So I'm very pleased with his community policing philosophy, and he shares it well. And I'm just very pleased that he's interested in community policing. And give us more time on Operation Stone Garden. We have wonderful people representing us in Old Bisbee. And we can get together and talk about this in a smaller group and get into ethics and philosophy. Give us more time.
Thank you. Maggie Kohanic, did you want to do number three?
Thank you. Maggie Kohanic, I live in Old Bisbee. Thank you all for being here and showing up and having your voices heard on all of these subjects. I'm kind of interested in the shift that's taken place just tonight. And before we had supposedly a discussion, most of it was presentation, and now we have a call to the public format, which I believe is not available for discussion from the council or question. So is that different format than call the public, or are we in a discussion?
We're an agenda item, and we can discuss, and okay. You can ask questions.
Great, thank you. So one of the questions that was on the list of questions to ask for tonight's presentation was, what has been the fiscal impact to the city in pension fund contributions for those high-earning years since the Stone Garden program began? And I heard a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but I didn't hear any direct answers to that. I do want to read in a 2009 article in the paper. It did mention some costs to Bisbee, which this is a past cost, but it's still a cost. And we have to talk about future costs also. So one of the things was in this article, which was titled U.S. Border Security Cash Leaves Towns on the Hook. It's all about Stone Garden. One of the things it says, in the case of two Bisbee police officers who surpassed their base pay in Stone Garden overtime in 2007, their retirement will go up by half, resulting in a combined total increase to the taxpayers, that's us, of nearly $725,000 if each person lives his retirement for 20 years. That was one piece that I found interesting. Another one was, it cost Bisbee $263,000 on the $627,000 that it was reimbursed for overtime, more than any other Arizona agency in that cycle. And they talked about a lot of cities in Arizona. And they also said that it was very difficult to gather information for this. There were two investigative reporters that are listed in this article. It was in 2009. So that was something I did not hear. I would love to have answered. What is the fiscal cost to the city of Stone Garden?
The finance director, I think you're still here, but I don't see you anywhere. Yeah. Oh, good.
Sorry, I got a book.
And if this can't be answered tonight, that's fine. I would like to have some written material about what it did cost and what it will cost before the council is able to vote on it tonight when all of these questions have come up. And I don't think we have real clear answers. And it did state in this article that a lot of council people and state agency people were not clear about the numbers. So if we could just table it, I'd be fine if we could eventually get some feedback in real clear numbers.
Mayor Fox,
City Manager Justin Johnson.
If I can just jump in and say, when we opened up the email to solicit questions, one of the things that we certainly acknowledge is the fact that some of the questions that were asked are, quite frankly, going to take a little bit of time. So I do respect and really appreciate you saying what you just stated as it relates to if we need to table that particular question, if you will, then we'll certainly do that, because the intent of getting all those questions is trying to answer as many as we can, as we could, through the presentation. But also, if there are some pertinent questions that need to be answered, which all of them are pertinent questions, is putting together an FAQ document. We receive a boatload of questions. Ashley has been working diligently between the agenda, getting ready for tonight's meeting, and answering and getting the FAQs answered. So the document itself, we hope to produce within a week, and trying to get all those questions answered. I mean, there are very important questions that we're asking, and I asked Chief to kind of go through some of those today to try to answer as much as we can tonight. But if Sharon, if there's a certain response that you want to go ahead and give, please jump right in.
Right. Out on the PSPRS website, there is an actual aerial that is done, and if you look on page D-4. Of the Bisbee Police Department, it talks about, and I think that the person that she's referring to, it's approximately what we pay for that employee is about $40,000 a year. And that's just not Stone Garden, that's for his service to this community. So where did he earn his Stone Garden money? In the beginning, in the end, in the middle? Did he transfer in? Did he transfer out? There's all those factors. You just can't tie it down. Was he a school resource officer? Maybe that was funded by a different grant. Maybe a portion of that's part of it. But it actually breaks it down. There is, for the Bisbee Police Department, there is 16 employees that were retired or beneficiary, survivor benefit. So if we have one of them, the other ones are 14 men, 2 women, 15 are, 11 are service pensions, 4 of those are disability pensions, so how does that figure into it? 1 is survivor, a spouse. That spouse, we pay $37,560 a year. So total pensions being paid based on this actual area is $639,229. The average pension is $39,952, so it's $40,000 for their service to the city, regardless of where the money came from.
And Mayor, also as a follow-up, I know part of the conversation, we're kind of bleeding into the bigger animal, which is PSPRS. And I was going to report it, but I'll just say it tonight. I did get confirmation today that a task force with the League of Arizona Cities and Towns, made up by local government officials, did confirm today that they will be here on February the 3rd to give an overarching overview on PSPRS, and we can try to interject some of our specific issues related to pension reform and what we can and what we can't do and what's going to change and what's not going to change at the February 3rd meeting. So I did send Ashley a note today to make sure we add that. And so some of those questions, quite frankly, hopefully will be answered at that point in time, but I do know that we're kind of bleeding over into that conversation, which, quite honestly, it's a very different conversation.
Let me expound on that, and Ms. Buono can confirm perhaps what I'm saying. Our pension, the city portion of our pension payments, are made up by the fund in Scottsdale, I believe, is on Camelback Road. And that is now 64% for the police department, 66%, I think, for the fire department. And the fund, in my opinion, was extremely mismanaged over the last maybe 7 years, perhaps, give or take a year. Various reasons for that, but I think it was extremely
mismanaged. And so what that 64.7% means, Ms. Buono, would you tell the audience what that means? What does that 64.7% mean?
That's for every dollar that we spend in salary, 64.7 is spent in retirement. And that changes every year based on the actual aerials. How many people are surviving? What are their ages? Are they moving from drop? There's all these factors, and it's really complicated. There's no doubt about it on how they come up with those rates. And that's set at the state level. There's health involved, health insurance costs involved in there, too. One of the things that I do want to mention about the police department is we have 13 employees based on this actuary that are supporting 16. So it's skewed. We're always going to pay more. And then, you know, the other side of that, too, is, you know, then we can't afford to hire more officers, so we don't have more employees to help support those that are retired. All the information is really there. If anybody would like to contact me, I'll try and walk you through it or point you to where the information is. But it's a very complicated issue that I will say that both our fire department and our police department are within the top five highest contribution rates. Next year it's going up, and we'll talk more about that at budget. I don't know that we really need to go there tonight. This is not a problem that we can easily solve here. Pensions will be paid. It's Arizona state law. And that's the first thing that goes to the budget. And then we make do with what's left over. So we really don't have a whole lot of options. We do. I would really encourage council to come up to that meeting in Oro Valley. And then the experts from the retirement system will be there, and you can ask some of those questions. There, we had some pretty big impacts this year because the SB was 611, I believe, was overturned, and that increased our liability greatly. And we have to deal with it. It's not like we can pick and choose.
My words were about how the fund is dramatically increased, primarily the city portion of those funds. The fund was mismanaged. There's no doubt about that in my mind at all. And so that is why the city portion of that is so much. In 2004, it was around 19%. It is now averaged between the two departments about 65%, and it will increase next year because of a cost of living allowance. I don't want to go into that right now. But what I'm trying to say is Stone Garden is a very small part of the pension increase. That's what I'm trying to say. The major increase on that is that fund managed out of Scottsdale. Once again, in my opinion, completely and totally mismanaged. And maybe circa 2002, it had a sustainability percentage of about 120%. It is now 59%. It is in trouble. And what has happened is the legislature has foisted this on the back of municipal and county and certain aspects of state government. And so I think it's unfair. It needs to be equalized throughout the state. And that'll be a difficult thing to happen. We are one of the highest, if not the highest rate, in the entire state of Arizona because of the ratio of officers and retired officers and a community not adding more public safety retired people. Most states in the country have an equalization program. It's equal, like the regular Arizona retirement system, and is paying, I think, 11.5% employee, 11.5% the city portion. Obviously managed quite well. And their return last year was 19.2%. That's the regular Arizona retirement system. The public safety retirement system returned 13.8%. And so it still doesn't look like they're doing well. They just copy the regular Arizona retirement system. They'd had a much greater return. But once again, it's at 59% sustainability. This is very dangerous. And so they're going to keep foisting this on the backs of municipal and county and state government employees. And the city portion is, and the city and county portions as well. Did I explain that correctly?
Correctly, yes, sir.
Councilmember Connors.
I can, like you, hope and pray that the state legislature does do something. But I think that these folks, the citizens, in large, want to know that we're attempting to mitigate the debt that we're accruing, and I don't as much as easy and as tempting as it is to talk about that back there, the past, I think the folks that are certainly in this room and listening, they want to know that we're working towards mitigating the amount that continues to accrue, and that is by behaving differently and managing things differently, and that I know, as certain as you are, that fund was mismanaged. I know that the citizens, particularly in Ward 1, want to be told that a psychic change needs to happen in the way things are managed in the departments of the city. And I understand that those numbers and the ability to change the percentage is not, we're totally powerless. But the amount of debt going forward, we can slow that down. And it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be tough, and it's not going to be like anybody necessarily wants to see, but the fact of the matter is that's the behavior that the citizens of Bisbee, I hope the majority of the citizens of Bisbee would like to see to sustain this town. Because at the rate we're going, in less than 60 years, there won't be anybody in this town. At the last census of the amount of people that have left Bisbee, in less than 60 years, at that rate, there will be zero people here. So, I think the public needs to know that items 3, 4, and 5 are actually a done deal, and we're just here to codify it. So if these folks think that something isn't going to be done in 3, 4, and 5, it's already done. So you can come up and talk, but we're just codifying what we've already done in the last meeting.
Thank you. Councilmember Sullivan.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Mayor, and Ann Carl, and Ashley, and Justin for getting this item out for work session for the people to learn a little bit more about and voice their opinions and address the concerns about open meeting law. And I'd also like to thank Officer Coronado and Chief Reyna for preparing the slideshow and answering our questions. I think that it did help a lot. This is a really difficult situation, and it's not just economic, it's also ethical, and a lot of people have voiced their concerns about the need for this program in our town and whether or not the mission is helping to make our streets in Bisbee any safer. And that's the whole reason we have a police department. And I love our police department. I think that our guys are really friendly and community-oriented. I grew up with a lot of them, and I've known Officer Reyna since I was a kid. He used to be the school officer. And so, anyway, I don't want any of them to think that I don't think that they deserve their paychecks or anything, because I know you work really hard, and we want to make sure that we can keep you guys on. But the reality of this pension problem is that we're not going to be able to keep a lot of staff on down the road, because we just can't afford to pay these municipal pensions, especially for the public safety. But I would like to recommend, maybe not for this year, since Gene already pointed out that it's already gone through, but maybe we need to look at mandating that the Stone Garden money only go to junior officers, so that it doesn't go into those later years of where they calculate your hours and pensions, so that we can at least mitigate possibly what we're going to be liable for down the road. Just a recommendation, something to think about. And I don't know if Gene was 100% sure or not, but I guess this is too late to not ratify. Is that what I'm understanding? Because I would like to motion to move this on to a committee to do more research and discussion and table it.
Well, let's hear from other people that haven't spoken yet. I think we need to go down that road first.
Thank you.
Ms. Buono, let me have a clarification. In my personal opinion, the amount of the Stone Garden overtime is doesn't add to the pensions very much. And my other thing I need a clarification for is we're going to perhaps get $100,000 in overtime. Does the 64.7% come out of that $100,000, or is that on top of that?
Correct. No. The $100,000 will cover all employee-related expenses and overtime.
Okay. So the 64.7% of the city portion of the pension will come out of that $100,000. Is that correct?
Correct.
So the officers in and of themselves are only going to divide up about $35,000. Does that make sense?
And also based on their hourly rates.
And so what, we have 13 officers right now? Is that what do we have?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you break that down, and that is not very much per officer. Is that correct?
It's not.
Okay. And so my point being, that is not going to add very much to the pension costs, because many of the officers will not retire for 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, 15 years, and their promotions and salary increases will make this $3,000 or $4,000 they may get from Stone Garden this year essentially a moot point.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, because they have to pick consecutive years. The junior officers would be 5 years, so you just can't go out and pick random years. They have to be consecutive. But the retiree has the right to pick that block of time, so it spreads it out over 5 years. It doesn't have to be the last 5 years. They could pick another block of time. But usually your earning capability is stronger later in your career than early.
Right. That is my point. So I think that is a consideration that is very important to understand. And my second point is, and a couple of speakers attended to it, there is a level of security for the community, especially in the outlying areas of San Jose and Warren. I think that's very important. I think we need to think about that. I think it's important. And if you're in the areas, not in the outlying areas, you might be more protected, but people do come across. Lots of illegal activity does happen, and I think we need to be cognizant of that. Any other questions or comments from the council? We're going to continue with Ms. Kohunek.
I guess I'm not understanding this, Mayor Ertley.
But, you
got it right.
I know. I'm trying. Because in this investigative report, which I picked up from the paper, they said that, now, maybe what you just explained was what happened before, and it's not going to happen now, but they were saying that a couple of police officers were actually getting a lot of the overtime cost, and it says right here in the article, their retirement will go up by half, resulting in a combined total increase to taxpayers of nearly $725,000 in their lives if they're retired for 20 years. So I don't know how that fact gets tossed out, but what you just presented is completely different than what was said in this article.
Could I interject? It appears to me that the overtime from Stone Garden is, every year it seems to, is going down. So we're not getting the massive amounts that we got 5, 6, 7 years ago.
So because I'd heard in the December 16th meeting that you actually made a statement that there was no fiscal cost for Stone Garden for the city of Bisbee. And that's what I'm still not real clear on. You said that it's minuscule now. And this article said it's horrendous a couple of years ago in 2009. So I'm confused. And if you go ahead and you said ratify it without any question, then I think that that one statement that you said could have actually influenced the vote on December 16th that said that there is no cost. And I don't think I've adequately gotten an answer that there absolutely is no cost. I'd like to see how much of a cost there is. You said it was minuscule now. Does that mean we're paying this large amount for the rest of the 20 years on these previous officers?
Yes.
And that was overlooked at the time. So I think it's rightfully so that we bring it up to the attention of the council. There have been problems. I wasn't ever aware of them. And I think it's really appropriate that we take time to discuss these issues and not just say, okay, it's ratified, it's a done deal. I'm sorry, I'm not, as a citizen, I'm not happy with that.
Well, you know, 2009 obviously is in the past, and there's not much we can do about that, obviously.
But it was a problem. However, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't happening.
However, we're dealing with an issue for the next year. And these are the numbers that I'm laying out, and Ms. Bono's laying out, that the officers are going to have approximately 35,000, give or take a little bit, to divide up among themselves, 13 officers, do the division on that. I know some officers do not participate in the program for whatever reason, but it's not very much in their pocket over the course of a year. If you divide that up, what are you going to get, $3,000 or $4,000 per officer? I don't think that's very much.
Well,
and I don't think that will impact their pensions very much at all, and some officers will not impact it at all, as I said earlier.
I would think that we would have time to be able to see that in writing if that was true. Because of the discrepancies in the last 2 years, if it was such a huge cost to all of us for the next 20 years, then I think it needs to be really clear of how much that we have to pay because of Stone Garden and before we ratified a vote. The other thing is, I think because we brought it to the attention of the city, I appreciate the recommendations done by the police officers. I can't believe that you're going to do volunteer hours and do what you said in the presentation. That's awesome. And that's the give and take that I'm thinking that we need more of in this community, the transparency of the government, the talking about it, the discussion, the listening, the writing it down. Word is very important to see these numbers written down. As they said in this article, a lot of citizens and city staff are really confused about the monies, where they come from, where they go. And I think it's real appropriate that we stand up and voice the impact that this is going to have in the long run. Thank you.
Let me reiterate one other point about security. When the officers, it might have been said before, but I just want to reiterate it. Officers working Stone Garden, if there's a call in Bisbee, they phone in, and they're taken off the Stone Garden time, and they can respond to an accident, a burglary, or whatever serious issue that might be concerned. So it actually puts more officers on the street. Is that correct, Officer Coronado?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
I would just like to make one other point. She's talking about an article that was written in 2009, and I believe I wasn't with the city then, but I don't know that there was a cap on overtime. So the individuals you're talking about had obviously excessive overtime in when you're looking at it. One of the things that we did on the slide tonight is, Sergeant Rainier, it's capped at 16 hours of a pay period, 16 hours a week, okay? So you're not going to have runaway overtime costs. So I'd like you to feel comfortable with that. They're managing that. We're looking at it. Another thing about Stone Garden funds is those are federal monies, and it's all part of the audit that we go through every single year. So they're looking at it. That is an administrative decision, but that's an administrative decision that our chief and our city manager have made. As far as requesting only junior officers, what my concern is about that is age. I mean, how can we say that only the young guys can work it? I want to make sure that we don't get into a discrimination issue because of our more seasoned officers. It's a voluntary program. They don't have to participate, and we're encouraging. The last report that I saw, there was one senior officer, but it was our three new ones. So I think we're really moving in that direction. You can feel comfortable with that. And we can, you know, the city manager can, you know, give directives to his chief of police on how he wants to handle these things with, you know, input from the council. So it wasn't a perfect system in 2009. I read all those articles, and I understand. But I think it was also nationwide. Cities and counties started looking at, wow, this is really impacting us in a different light. So we've put in changes, and we look forward to minimizing the liability for the city. Liability can change at any time. It changed from last year to this year. If some reason the investment fund all of a sudden is very positive, then we could be the other way. We could be overfunded. So we just need to keep our fingers crossed and do the best that we can for, you know, constructive reform. So,
Mayor?
Councilmember Connors.
It's always better to be overfunded than underfunded.
I know, but it can happen. It can change.
Councilmember Sullivan.
Thank you. That was really helpful also. One more possible consideration for Chief Reyna is they could maybe stagger it so that the guys don't participate in Stone Garden 3 years in a row, just to kind of avoid, you know, just the padding of hours. I think that that might help.
And Councilperson Sullivan, certainly in our conversations with the police department, we have been very diligent in addressing the fact that there was a point in time, I'll just flat out say, you know, we screwed up in the past. That's just the bottom line. You know, and there's you know, our practices that we have in place now are addressing the areas where we flat out screwed up in the past. And so, you know, the police department has been very diligent in addressing this particular issue, and we're trying to work through. We're trying to be open by way of this forum in addressing issues and the concerns that the community had. And that's just the fact. Those are just the facts, and we're going to continue to do what it is we need to do as it relates to, in the spirit of transparency, in the spirit of, you know, making sure that our community is safe. Because the fact of the matter is, and from where I sit, the number one responsibility of us as leaders within this community is to provide for safety. As soon as you lose it, the perception of your community changes, and it's hard. It is incredibly hard to get that back. And so, you know, what did we get? And, you know, one of our conversations I had with Councilwoman Hanson, you know, once we lose that perception of safety, perception is reality. Once we lose it, we cannot. It's hard to get it back. And so, and that's the one thing that's so the breaking point for us. You know, we want to provide for public safety. We also want our community to feel comfortable. And that's the reason why we have been very intentional, you know, under the leadership of Chief Reyna, is to embrace this concept of community-oriented policing and be intentional about it. And so I just hope by way of this forum and the conversation that we have and the actions taken by Mayor and Council, the community feels comfortable that that's what we're attempting to do.
Thank you. We have another person on the list. Let me go to Donna Pulling. I don't see you, but I'm sure you're there. You are.
Donna Pulling, I live in Bisbee. I would like to direct a question to our city attorney as to the reason why we're ratifying this vote. I don't think that we ratify every vote that we that comes before us, and I believe that the reason that we are ratifying this vote is because of a question that came up about the proper noticing of the December 16th meeting where the vote was approved. And if I could ask you to explain to us why we are even going through a ratification process right now, because our council member Connors has implied that this is a done deal. And in my understanding of the reading of the open meeting law statute, that this is not a done deal until the investigation into the allegations of a violation of an open meeting law have been completed. And if there are any improprieties that may have occurred during that open meeting law process, that the vote that was taken at that meeting is null and void. So I'd just like to have an explanation about why we're going through this ratification of it.
So the ratification is actually a process to make the vote not null and void. The ratification process, if you don't ratify, it will become null and void. The ratification process, though, has nothing to do with your complaint to the Attorney General, as I understand it, as you've presented your complaint to this mayor and council. An explanation as to the origins of the complaint has to do with a technical issue. The City Hall is our official posting place, okay, for physical posting of the notice. And with respect to the meeting on December 16th, the notice was posted inside, and this building closes at 5 o'clock. And my understanding from now speaking with the city manager and the clerk is that this physical posting location will from now on have a glass case outside or some sort of way that people can see what's happening. And this wouldn't have come to light unless our website went down and unless citizens who didn't see what was going on in real time complained about it. So that's why we're doing the ratification. It's to make the vote null that would be null and void without making this decision ratified.
Exactly. So that if this item were tabled tonight and it was taken up at another time for a vote, that would be perfectly acceptable to do that.
If I may, the ratification process must happen within 30 days of knowledge that there was an open meeting law issue, or possible issue. So, you know, that would be true if the meeting were inside of those 30 days, but it would not be true if it were not.
Then I guess the question goes to the council, perhaps the city manager, is if this vote were tabled right now and we were going to reconsider it at another meeting, even if it were beyond the 30-day ratification time period, would that prevent us from obtaining the Stone Garden grants that we so desperately depend upon?
I mean, that's certainly not my place as it relates to tabling, but I do know we have an executed contract that's already been sent to the Department of Homeland Security. And we also have a justice of the peace that's in place and a city magistrate that's in place that's a part of that whole process. So that's all I can say to that. As far as tabling, that's certainly not my position to take.
But you have a contract that perhaps would have not been properly approved.
I think you're asking, and please forgive me, I think you're asking a hypothetical, and I really don't deal in hypotheticals,
okay.
So I would much rather
stick
to my comment.
Councilmember Connors.
This question, I guess, would be for either Staff Sergeant Coronado or Chief Reyna. Is there a window, has the window come and gone to apply for this this grant?
The window that is for the fiscal year 14 has arrived and is currently in the process. We have till March 31st to actually put the item has to be presented to Operation Stone Garden or DHO or Arizona Department of Homeland Security by the 31st, but it has to be approved prior to using funds per our agreement with the Chief of Police as well as the City of Orton. Before we can use any funds that are out of that grant, we have to have approval by the council.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments? I know there's a few more people signed up. Alice? Why don't you come up to the podium?
I would just like
Alice
to...
Alice Hammers,
yeah. McNeil. In the middle of the desert, where there's no police... Our sheriff takes a half an hour. The border is 12 miles away. We've had crossers. We're safe. We're two women. We have two dogs that one is sick, I'm sorry to say. But I don't feel threatened. I don't. I don't have police immediately. We have a gun. We have a gun for rattlesnakes, and that is a danger. But the police are often very helpful, I know, with rattlesnakes, but it doesn't take a flak jacket and a helmet. I just think safety is two issues. Safety, Nick described a feeling of safety. Do we feel safe with police? When I was in Mexico, the police were standing there, and this is Oaxaca, Mexico, so it's not AP, but the police are standing there with full body thing. You get a feeling, right? There's a feeling. So safety is different things to different. I feel safer when a police is not wearing 400 pounds of gear, and I know he can move, or she can move. I feel safer, I want the police in my community. And yes, Chief Reyna, I found our conversation incredibly intelligent. It was pretty amazing. So I just think let's table this. Let's wait. Let's do what Mary asked. Let's hang on. We have till March 31st. Maybe these funds are important. Maybe they are, you know, and maybe we do, but maybe we're buying the wrong equipment. Maybe something. Let's just think it through. Let's explore. Like I said, I've been in the desert 10 years. I'm safe. Two women. Never had a problem. Crossers. No problem. Tamales. Feed people tamales. They're happy. They're okay. They're safe. Marijuana? We have all smoked it. God. You know, let's take a rest.
Officer Coronado.
Mayor, if I may speak to a point that the Councilman Connors addressed the timeline.
Yeah.
The timeline to actually deliver is the 31st of March, but as normal protocol with the City of Bisbee, we have always signed the contract before any fiscal funds are used by our police department prior to a contract being signed by you, so your acknowledgement is there. That is just the normal protocol we've always had with the city to make sure that you are completely aware of exactly what the police department is doing, as well as the chief of police is definitely kept in the loop as far as exactly the monies that are being used for any operation, whether it be Stone Garden, any other grants that we might have out there that are HIDA grants, that things that come through our police department. We always make sure that the council is completely aware of the situation. Just because we have a time date that we have to have it in, it doesn't mean that it's any. It doesn't mean that we can wait till that long to get it to the position it needs to be. But we also make sure that you, as a council, are completely aware that we're doing it, and we don't go out of our bounds to use monies that aren't approved as of yet. And that's why the purpose of having it done in December, so that July 1, when the actual grants became one or from 13 to 14. We wanted to make sure that the council was fully aware that we were using 14 funds, not 13 funds anymore. And so that's the purpose of having it in front of you in December rather than having it to you later in the early part of this year.
Thank you. Okay. I think we have one more person. Marie Minor, did you talk on number 3 yet? I don't think so.
Hello, Marie Minor. I live in Briggs, and I promise I'll make this on the short side. I just wanted to make sure that... Well, first of all, I would like to advocate again the tabling of this particular issue. Thank you for the extension in time on this sense. But I want to give to you some of the questions that were not touched upon that I feel need to be covered. And I would also like to refer to Nick's comment and his remark about the police vehicle expenses. No one has answered that question. What's going to, what pays for the police vehicle expenses like the tires, the gasoline, et cetera? I looked at the presentation and didn't get that one.
Can I comment on that, Ms. Minor?
Yes, sir.
I think there's $15,000 allocated for that out of Homeland Security. Is that right, Officer Coronado?
Yes, there is $15,000 for vehicle reimbursement or mileage reimbursement, and that's at the standard rate of 0.445% or cents per mile. So that includes the cost of what would be wear and tear on the vehicle, just like any other normal state or federal agency, but also the gas expense reimbursement.
Thank you.
Thank you. I hope that covers the amount that we need. Okay, here's the questions that were not covered at all. One is, what is a reasonable time for further discussion and investigation before the council votes? Secondly, in a time when federal money for social programs, infrastructure, and economic development is diminishing, let's think about our priorities, about where we want to see our money spent. That was implied in one of the other questions. So the third one is, are the hours distributed evenly over the entire police force, and are the officers encouraged to share the overtime hours, or are the hours accumulated by only a few officers? And an implication in that, if it's a few, is it the people with most seniority get a chance to grab at it, thus raising their annual earnings to the highest level? third, another one, I mean, is do the officers get special training to perform stone garden activities? No one's addressed that one at all. And next one is, and the last is, what evidence do you have to support the claim that the equipment purchased with Stone Garden grant money has made Bisbee police safer by reducing crime? Don't even know if that's an objective, but that would be an interesting one to get answers to, like providing statistics between the time period in which we've had Stone Garden. Has it had that impact on social problems? Thank you.
I don't have the answers to all of those questions. As far as officers participating in the program, I know that I think a few do not participate in it for maybe personal reasons. Maybe Mr. Coronado could expound on that.
Yes, Mayor, thank you. A couple of years ago, I want to say 2010, 11, officers were divvied up a certain amount of hours that they could work throughout the grant process. They were given just a round number that I can off the top of my head, 150 hours that they could work. Whether they worked them or whether they didn't work them was entirely up to the officer. It wasn't given by seniority, and it's still to this day not given by seniority. It's given right now. We're at the point in our Operation Stone Garden, the funding process, is that we don't necessarily have enough officers to work this program to spend the amount of money that we are given. So officers that do work the program work it without having any preset number that they have to get to, like 150 hours. But they do have the cap at right now, currently it's 25 hours per pay period, per week, 50 hours per pay period, which is going to be reduced as of tonight after this meeting. Every officer was given a certain amount, and it was divvied up evenly throughout the police department to include administrative staff, command staff, sergeants, patrol supervisors, and then down the line. So every officer got the same amount of hours every year. Because we didn't have the huge influx of people coming out and working the program, it was decided that was going to go away and that officers would stay within their capped limits per week. But it was an unlimited amount that they could work per year, but it wasn't that they had to hit a certain number like 150 hours. They could work just their 25 a week, and that was it, unlimitedly, as long as they stayed within the parameters of what the command directive was. There is no formal special training. There is a program called outbound program that is conducted down at the port of entry. That has to go through federal Title 19 training that is put on by the port of entries. Their customs agents, their specialized agents, come to our department, or we go to their agencies, and we are trained on outbound operations, meaning we are looking for large amounts of currency going south into Mexico, weapons going back into Mexico, ammunition going back into Mexico, those type of items that normally are crossed through the port of entry through a perfectly legal process of going into Mexico, just with a legal activity that's included with it. So our officers, if we are working a southbound detail, we will actually have our officers go down and assist the Customs and Border Protection agents that are down there to actually be a part of this. But that would be the only formalized training that we have as officers. Anything else would be just normal police academy or standard training that is done throughout the year for continuing training in any field that we're trying to, whether it be narcotics detection, traffic law, those sort of things. Those are the normal things that we do on an everyday basis through our normal shifts. So those are done. That's primarily what our goal is on Operation Stone Garden, except if we do decide to work on operation of the southbound detail does happen, that would be the only formal training.
I have a question. The mayor and the council make decisions, and I've always felt the number one obligation of the mayor and council is the protection and safety of the community in various aspects. My question is, with the cartels operating in Mexico, and this is an opinion, I'm sure, but you might have factual data on this, are their operations moving into the United States?
Southern Arizona is basically what we would consider a corridor for several different operations that are happening within the southern region of the United States. I can't speak of anything directly that I have knowledge of that I could give you factual basis on, but I can tell you through my training and experience as a law enforcement officer, I can tell you that there are several organizations within just the Sierra Vista, Bisbee, Douglas area that do infiltrate north to Tucson, Phoenix, that actually that will actually branch themselves out to Southern California, Northern California, and New Mexico and Texas, for that matter. I wouldn't be able to give you factual details as far as that's concerned, but there is a large enterprise of illegal activity that does occur in the southern region of our state. Mm-hmm. And again, Bisbee's right pretty much smack dab in the middle of it. We have two major highways. Everybody knows this. We have two major highways that come through the city of Bisbee. To get to any normal place or any place in the southern Arizona, you at one point have to either come through Bisbee or completely avoid Bisbee one way or the other. Mm-hmm. We have two, Highway 92, and we also have Highway 80. Highway 80 comes all the way from I-10. It's a huge corridor for illegal drug activity, to include Highway 191, Highway 92. So, yes, I wouldn't be able to say cartels for that sake, but I would definitely say entities within those organizations that do operate within the city of Bisbee, Douglas, and Sierra Vista within the local areas, to include Palominos and out in Double Adobe.
Let me ask one more question along those same lines, because I think it's pertinent. Is there a dramatic increase in heroin trafficking and meth?
Yes, as a matter of fact, over the past year, we've had a large influx of black tar heroin that is actually being found and on the streets of city of Bisbee. These items have been, through months and months of investigation and good police work, we have put a damper on part of that through our through officers' diligence and hard work. But this, it's the heroin portion of it, yes, there's a huge increase in the amount of cases we have had recently. The methamphetamine cases, it's not that it's increasing any, but it's not getting any better. There is definitely still an influx of that on the streets. So, yes, there is a large amount of heroin that is being, that is new to us. It's something that is not normally, the city of Bisbee doesn't normally deal with that. Our police department doesn't normally deal with the heroin issue as bad as it is. But we are definitely trying to make strides to curb that.
When we're talking about the protection and safety of a community or a nation, I've read that the heroin-related deaths in America over the last 3 years have almost doubled.
Yes.
It's a dramatic increase. And so this affects people in all various economic strata and various in the social stratas. It's across the board. It affects everybody. And that's the part of the protection and safety of the community, is those that are dying, and if we can somehow prevent that. Would you want to expound on that just a little bit?
Yes, with the guidance of our chief of police and also the officers that we have working for us, we definitely trying to put a stop to this and trying to get our officers to be involved in being proactive rather than reactive in the sense of what we're trying to accomplish as a community, definitely puts us in the position to try to stop this before it actually starts. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Well, why don't you go up the podium once again, and you can ask him at the podium, or ask me.
Okay. The last question on this was, has Stone Garden grant money made Bisbee safer by reducing crime?
Without true statistics in front of me, I wouldn't be able to explain how it has done that. There has been statistics that are out that I can make available to you, the council, as well as the general public at another forum if necessary, that will show the amount of influence Stone Garden officers in the city have actually had to put a damper on these organizations. Without getting into too much detail again, for the sake of time, there are Stone Garden usually, to get true and accurate numbers, usually Stone Garden doesn't, we don't do this until every 2 or 3 years to make sure that our numbers do coincide with what's actually happened with officers on the road. We are now coming up to our third year without there being a statistics. The last statistics we did were back in 2012, which would be fiscal 11. So we're getting to that time where we're going to start putting numbers together again to figure out exactly what position we're in as far as the numbers concerning the statistics as to how much actual overtime is being used. In 2000, and just real quick, in 2008, just a number that's off the top of my head, the city of Bisbee Police Department recovered 55 stolen vehicles that were coming through the city of Bisbee in 2008. If you put a number to that, if you put a number to, say, $10,000 on each vehicle that was recovered, you're looking at almost $550,000 worth of vehicles that were recovered and returned back to their owners. That doesn't include the drug loads that were in the vehicles. That doesn't include the illegal arms that were found in the vehicles. That doesn't include the felony warrants, the misdemeanor warrants, the other things that come with the stolen vehicles, the drugs, the personal use drugs. That doesn't include all of those numbers. But that's just a number that I can throw off the top of my head as far as it being an influence, how our officers and how well they work on the roads to make sure that they're doing their best to make sure that they take it. This program and make it the absolute best we can for the city of Bisbee.
Thank you.
Mayor?
Council Member Connors.
Staff Sergeant Coronado, have the heroin and methamphetamine arrests doubled?
Quite honestly, without statistics in front of me, again, I couldn't answer that, but I would be willing to bet that they probably even gone tripled to quadrupled.
Really?
Because again, like I was explaining, Bisbee is not known for that type of activity in it. We're not known for having that large amount of the amount of cases we've had on heroin in the past year. In just my 17 years of being on the force, I've never seen this many cases of heroin. I could probably tell you on one hand how many cases I've had in the 17 years as a law enforcement officer here in the city that I've been privy to. And I can tell you that that's probably doubled, if not tripled, in the last year that I've been here, year that we've had.
No, I appreciate the answer. We're sitting here. We're all sitting here again. I don't need to point that out, but I just did. And we're dealing with some statistics, and we're dealing that really haven't been nailed down, but. There's two issues here. Our safety, and can we afford the rate that we're going? So when we start talking about heroin and methamphetamines and the day in and the day out business that you guys deal with, and I'm not minimizing it, and I don't do it, and I wouldn't do it, and God bless you, and we'll pay you. However, when we speak and use incendiary words and we talk emotionally, like I always do, and I can't control myself, things spin, we get further apart from what we're trying to do.
Sure.
You know, and I personally think that these numbers and facts that you've read and shared with us, Mayor, don't help this discussion at all, because we are aware. We are aware, maybe not at the frequency or the rate it is, but what we're aware of is what's happening to the whole city, the entire city, which public safety is part of a whole pie. So we need to have hard numbers and hard facts if we're gonna throw them around. And then we have to have the reality from Sharon Bono of how much money do we have? And as far as I'm concerned, going forward with items three and four, if we could ratify this evening, I would like to, as long as the people that want this to not be ratified could believe us as a body that we are working towards ethical, moral, physical, spiritual, and economic sustainability. We're working towards that. And if you leave this room this evening thinking that all, you know, we were talking out of both sides of our neck, it is not. It's not a fact, because we are working towards the way things have been done and the way things can be done. And it's a new way of thinking. I understand that. But as far as items 3 and 4 go, if you believe me, Maggie Kohanic and Mary Adams and anybody in Ward 1, I thank you. If you believe that I would ratify 3 and 4 and work as hard as I could and convince you and include you in every meeting that we have going forward regarding any grant money that we ask for the police department. In the next I have 2 years left in my term. I swear to God, I will call you and you, because you are the trumpets and you will get word out to more people. But this is, we're like at a standoff here, damned if we do or damned if we don't, this evening. So I beseech you to let me as your councilman, and I'm not going to speak for the other bookend over there, that I'm willing to ratify this with the hiccups that happened with the website. And going forward, from this day forward, I will be true and honest and as invisible and transparent, or however you want to label me, with the people that I am responsible to. So that's where I stand. I would like to see some movement on item number 3. So I move to ratify, pursuant to ARS 38.
Councilmember Connors, I think there might be one more person that wants to talk.
Maybe not.
maybe two. Grady Meadows, are you there? Did you want to talk on this particular item? Maybe he's not here. James Young? Come on up.
Well, my name is James Young. I live in Warren. I worked in drug and alcohol rehab and psychiatric nursing for 8.5 years. If you don't ratify this stuff, you could see your community just go to hell in a handbasket. I've seen what it does to people. I've seen what it does to families. You throw that rock in the pond and the ripples are going to go out all over the place. We need this money. We need this money to help keep us safe here. We haven't even mentioned terrorists. I don't even know why in the hell nobody mentioned that. That's a potential too. And if you think it's, you're kidding yourself, you don't think that's a potential reality. A lot of you don't care about the drugs and things. I see the health of these people that are walking around downtown. I observe this stuff. And I'm sure there's some other people in here that observe it. It deteriorates. You can tell they're doing something that it's not good for them. I know of a young man I saw today. I'm going, holy cow, what is going on? He's got to be doing drugs. He looks like a skeleton compared to what he was not too long ago. And I know who he is. I've liked this kid for years. And I'm just going, holy cow, what's going on with him? If you let this stuff infiltrate our community, which it already has to some degree, you're going to be damn sorry. A lot of us are old hippies, and we went through the drug thing and all that crap. Well, this is a whole new ballgame. I'm scared of who comes across that border. I'm damn scared. Because all it takes is one or two terrorists to come over here and start getting their equipment together and coming into town and doing some mass killing. You don't think it could happen here? You're full of it. You have no idea. You have no idea what's in store. You think those people in Paris went to work that day to think, gee, we're going to have a meeting, we're going to go into that meeting, and the next thing you know, they're out in body bags. Quite frankly, I don't want to see that happen here. I love Bisbee. I think this one got something brought me here. I have no idea, but I ended up here, and some people say it's a calling. I tell people I'm waiting for the mothership to land, especially the veterans, or the, not the veterans, the visitors, they asked me, what brought you to the visitor? I said, well, I'm waiting for the mothership. I thought that big orange bus was the mothership, but it wasn't. But anyway, I have to go along with Gene. He knows me. I know him. We know where we're coming from, and we're not kidding. So anyway, thank you for letting me speak.
Absolutely. Appreciate thank it. You. Councilmember Hansen, did you have some comments?
Yes, I do. I'm not against Stone Garden. I think there is a lot of value to the program. And I don't think it's a militarization of the police, which was cited in one of the questions. However, I am very concerned, and I'm still concerned, about the fact that when this discussion should have taken place on December 16th, when it was on the agenda, it didn't because there was a glitch in the website. And people were not aware that the two items were going to be talked about that evening. It wasn't an emergency, as Sergeant Coronado has said, excuse me, Staff Sergeant. And that concerns me. It concerns me in terms of transparency, because I think we have to earn the trust of the public back. And because of that, I will not be voting to ratify it.
Any other? Do we have everybody from the audience that wanted to participate in the work session able to speak? You're certainly welcome to do that now if you'd like. I guess that's it. Any further comments or questions from the council?
Yes, I'm clear in terms of the consensus of the council. I mean, I'd like to hear a motion, and then I'd like to speak on that motion. I think that's parliamentary procedure is set up to do that. Are we proposing tabling this, or are we proposing ratifying?
Well, let me just start. To clear up any questions regarding the amended agenda, the petition presented to the council on January the 6th, 2015, in regards to action taken on December the 16th, 2014, this ratification is being presented to the council. I move that we ratify the following action taken at the December 16th, 2014 council meeting: an agreement between the Arizona Department of Homeland Security for Operation Stone Garden, award number 140415-01, and the City of Bisbee Police Department in the amount of $115,000. Of this, $100,000 for overtime and employee-related expenses, and $15,000 for mileage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second.
Hey, Mayor.
We're done. Okay.
Certainly, 2 weeks ago, I voted for this, and I intend to do so this evening, and I want to explain why. Certainly, we're going to soon be moving into this year's budget cycle. As indicated by Sergeant Coronado, we are now, in terms of our police force, down to two officer shifts. I certainly want to hear back from citizens in terms of are we talking about reducing that level of support from our police department. We are certainly in a situation of having some serious budget constraints, and that's the question before us. Whenever I hear people, and when we talk about needs in this community, the most frequent response is for a solution is get a grant. Unfortunately today, with the obsession with border security and our public as well as our Congress, that's one of the few areas in which there is indeed grant funds. There's an opportunity here to augment the level of support and security that we have from our local police department. Also, I've heard from a number of people, I like our policemen. A year ago, we started community policing. I want to commend our police department in terms of the increasing presence of our officers on the streets in terms of community policing. That is only possible if there, I think all other interesting note here is the realization of this peculiar geographics of Bisbee. 30 square miles, at least 15 miles from one corner to the other. Two officers trying to patrol that and provide us with the security and safety that we want. Certainly the Stone Garden officer then provides one more person on duty. Back to my earlier statement, we've said number of people, I like our policemen, I like what they're doing. And I guess my number one reason for voting on this, better us, meaning the Bisbee Police Department, than them, meaning Border Patrol. I'd much rather, in terms of how we are viewed by visitors and ourselves, that it's Bisbee police cars who are out patrolling Bisbee and not the Border Patrol. You all know I bicycle every morning down to the border. No matter when I go, I encounter in my 10 miles round trip 2 to 6 Border Patrol agents. What in the world they're doing, I don't know. But thank goodness they're not in Bisbee. except for coffee, coming in for coffee. So I think it's better us than them in terms of this security. Also, I think, we're making reference to some past experiences where individuals exploited the system. We certainly, in the presentation here this evening, have recommendations in terms of how we're going to implement the Stone Garden program, and we've got some very positive statements addressing the issues that you have addressed here. Also, the question about bulletproof vests. Every day you're reading about, we got this crazy gun culture today. What it is to be a police officer today, just think about that. And what can we do to protect those officers? What can we do to protect the husband of a person in this community? The obligation in terms of the city of providing the maximum amount of security to our officers. It's a bad situation out there, and yet we have excellent police officers here. And it's better us than them that are patrolling the streets in this community. Thank you.
Any other comments from the council? Just a quick Councilmember Klein.
I don't think I can top what Councilmember Dunn said, because I think he hit everything. And that was the one thing that I'm glad you brought it up. Was, there's been reference to the vests and things like that. You know, they protect us every day. And to me, we need to provide them the equipment that they need to protect themselves, because right. It is rough out there. But we need to think of our officers and their safety, just like they think of our safety.
Yes. Any other comments? Council Member Sullivan.
Yes, thank you, Doug, for that comment, because I agree. I'd much rather have our Bisbee police patrolling downtown and around the pit and everything than the Border Patrol. Unfortunately, we still do get a lot of them around. But it provides income for our city, too, so I guess that's okay. But I think I have been moved to go ahead and ratify, especially because the police department is taking the steps necessary through their administrative policies. And I just like to know that we're thinking about the larger picture. And I was opposed at the last two meetings ago just because I felt like it got rushed through and I felt it deserved the time to talk about it. And that's why I really thanked everyone who went into making it available for the public to speak on and express themselves. But when it gets down to it, it looks like we can mitigate the amount of pension that it's going to be costing us in the long run. $4,000 per officer over the course of a year isn't that much, and these guys could definitely use it. And if that means it's going to help to keep heroin and meth out of town, then I really support that. I do think we need to do more towards that mission. I don't think that Stone Garden really helps that much with our meth and heroin problems. I think we should really take a look at that and see what can be done. But I just want to thank everybody that spoke tonight, and I really appreciate all the work that the public also put in voicing their concerns, and I hope that you're not too mad at me for my decision, but I really do think that this is the best option right now. And I also think we should move away from federal funds and look at how to be sustainable as a city and not need those outside funds, but we're not ready for that, but it's something to think about and prepare for. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other?
Just one more.
Councilmember Klein.
One more comment. Thank you, Ms. Sullivan, for for what you just said. And I know we've kind of, you know, said a few things about Border Patrol, and we don't want them here, but actually they do provide backup for our officers in the event that we need them. So they are a necessary entity, and I, for one, am glad that we have them to back us up as well as CCSO. So we couldn't do it without the deputies as well.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Any other thoughts?
I have one comment.
Council Member Dowdy.
There is a young man going to the church that I go to, and he is on Border Patrol. And I ask him, I says, does Stone Garden really help you? He said, yes. They have a lot more territory they can cover than we do. And when we need them, they're there. They do help, and we love them. So, and we do too.
So do we. Yeah. Thank you. No further comments. We have a motion and a second. Ms. Coronado, would you? I need a roll call vote on this.
Councilmember Connor?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Nay.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Ertley?
Aye. Motion passes 6-1. Item number 4, ratification pursuant to ARS 38-431.05 of actions taken on December the 16th, 2014. The purpose of the items is to validate an earlier action by the Mayor and Council regarding Operation Stone Garden for equipment. And once again, this is to, we do have some people signed up for this, whether they want to repeat that. How about we'll start off with Marie Minor, you had number 4? Okay. Maggie Kuhnick, are you okay? Alice Hammers, are you still here? On Donna Pulling? No? Okay. Grady Meadows? Okay. Mary Adams, did you want to do number 4? No? Okay. I'm like John Stewart, going like this. Where are we at here? Okay. I think we've gone through the list. Nicholas Knight, did you want to speak again on number 4? Maybe you're not here. Danny Scott, are you still here? Did you want to speak again? Okay, no. Peter Van Gundlach, did you want to speak again? Okay, thank you. So what we have, once again, to clear up any questions regarding the amended agenda, the petition presented to the council on January the 6th, 2015, in regards to action taken on December the 16th, 2014. This ratification is being presented to the council. Any questions or comments? No? Do we have a motion?
I move that we ratify the following action taken at the December 16, 2014 council meeting. An agreement between the Arizona Department of Homeland Security for Operation Stone Garden Award number 140415-02 and the City of Bisbee Police Department in the amount of $12,000 for equipment.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other thoughts, comments? We have a motion and a second. Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Nay.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Ertley?
Aye. Motion passes 6-1. Item number 5, ratification pursuant to ARS 38-431.05 of actions taken on December the 16th, 2014. The purpose of the item is to validate an earlier action by the Mayor and Council regarding approval of the appointment of Mr. Adam Ambrose as the City Magistrate. And so, once again, to clarify any questions regarding the amended agenda, the petition presented to the Council on January the 6th, 2015, in regards to the action taken on December the 16th, 2014, this ratification is being presented to the Council. Any questions? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the appointment of Mr. Adam Ambrose as the City of Bisbee Magistrate.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Once again, any other questions? No? Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. I'm going to ask the council if they would like to have a 10-minute recess. We've been up here about 2 hours once again. I see legs moving, so I think maybe I'm going to recommend maybe about a 7 to 10-minute recess. Ordinance O-15-01 relating to increasing the transaction privilege tax levied by the City of Bisbee by an additional 1% of the gross revenues or values that are subject to such tax, with all these additional revenue to be used for maintenance, repair, replacement, and improvement of the city streets and infrastructure, amending the city tax code, providing penalties for the violation thereof, designating effective and termination dates, providing for repeal and severability. Ms. Ann Carl.
Yes, we went through this the last time when we passed the notice of intent to adopt this ordinance. This is just a housekeeping matter, really, because the voters decided in November to move forward in this direction, and this little piece of it didn't get included in the last ordinance, so we need to just go back and fix that.
Any questions or comments from the
Mayor,
council?
Mayor, I move to adopt Ordinance 01501 relating to increasing a transaction privilege tax levied by the City of Bisbee by additional 1% of the gross revenue or values that are subject to such tax, with all these additional revenues being used for maintenance, repair, replacement, and improvement of the city streets and infrastructure, amending the city tax code, providing penalties for the violations thereof, designating effective termination dates, providing for repeal and severability.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Jett?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 7, public auction of designated surplus property located adjacent to 5B Moon Canyon. Parcel A as indicated on the attached map. Once again, Ann Carl, City Attorney.
Right. This parcel is nestled in the vicinity, close vicinity, adjacent to abutting someone's property. They're trying to sell their property right now. And this first parcel is just a freestanding piece of land. The next parcel is a little bit different, and I'll need to say something about that. But you're doing an auction now, so you can open it up to bids. But just so that you know, you're allowed as a council to reject any bids for any reason if you'd like to do that. The code allows that.
So. Thank you. This is the time and place set for the public auction of designated surplus property located on a portion of an unnamed public right-of-way that parallels the southeast side of 5B Moon Canyon on Parcel A, as indicated on the map, and the minimum bid is $1,033. Is there a bid? Would you want to come up to the podium?
Yeah, my name is Alvin Sandler. And I live at property at 5B Moon Canyon belongs to my wife and me. So I would do the bid.
So you're doing the bid for the minimum bid?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Are there any other bids? Do we have a motion?
I move that we accept the bid from Alan Sandler and his wife in the amount for this, the amount of $1,033 for the parcel A on the southeast corner of 5B Moon Canyon.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 8, public auction of designated surplus property located adjacent to 5B Moon Canyon, parcel B, as indicated on the attached map.
Once again, Ann Carl, city attorney.
Right. Parcel B is a little bit different because Parcel B involves a garage that these property owners did not build themselves. They've been paying taxes on the property for all of these years since they've owned the property. They own a small sliver of this garage that is actually built on their property that they do own. So it's a more complicated issue. Generally speaking, it was through no fault of theirs that this property has this garage on it, and they have been doing the responsible thing by paying taxes all these years.
And they also came to the city to get this arranged.
That's my understanding.
Okay. This is the time and place to set for the public auction of the designated surplus property located on a portion of unnamed public right-of-way that parallels the southeast side of 5B Moon Canyon, or parcel A as indicated on the map, and that the minimum bid is $2,571 or equivalent value.
Do we have a bid?
Parcel B.
Yeah, it's parcel B.
Yes.
Thank you. We have a bid in the amount of $2,571, Mr. Sandler? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Would you want to come up to the podium? Now, would you want to state your name?
Sure. My name is Tanya Borgeson.
Tanya?
Yes. Tanya Borgeson.
How do you spell your last name?
B as in boy, O-R-G-E-S-O-N.
Borgeson.
Correct.
Okay. And are you placing a bid?
Yes, I am.
And how much?
$2,671.
We now have a bid for $2,671. Is there another bid?
$2,761.
We now have a bid for $2,761, did you say, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. $2,761. Do we have a bid?
He said 700.
He said 2,761.
2,871. And I mean no harm. It is a great, would be a wonderful property for my ceramic studio, and I've been looking for quite some time for a great property.
Okay, we now have a bid from Ms. Borgeson for $2,871. Would you like to make a...
We've owned this property for 30 years and paid taxes.
Would you want to come up to the podium, please? Is this appropriate, Ms. Carmel?
Yes.
Okay.
We've owned this property for 30 years and paid taxes on it. It was never explained to us when we bought the property. We consider it part of the whole area with the house and the land around it, and I think it's inappropriate for somebody to just look for a studio.
Thank you.
Point of question.
Yes.
Could you clarify this property, if the second bidder wins it, isn't there a piece connected to this property that's owned by the Sandlers?
Right.
That would make this property, they'd have to work that out before she could actually use it, isn't that
right.
correct?
There is an issue of... a piece of the garage is legally on their property, the Sandlers, and to sell it to someone else would mean, first of all, a nightmare for me in writing the deed, because I'll have to do an easement for the Sandlers to get to their piece of the garage that they own, and you know, who knows if the uses will be compatible with a studio even. And I'm not sure exactly what piece they own, but if it's a window, for example, and they whatever it is, it will be problematic from a just technically putting the deed together point of view.
Councilmember Klein.
It's a corner of the building. We've been asked by the prospective buyers of the rest of the property to tear it down so that it relieves us of the possible lien on the part that that little corner is on, and we're prepared to do that.
Councilmember Klein?
Ms. Borgeson, do you have property adjacent to this?
No, I do not. I have been looking and have an offer on another property in Bisbee, and as I was looking around that area and hiking, I saw this property. I spoke with the assessors, and I spoke with Joel Ward, and have gotten pretty concrete information that I would present my own survey on the property and pay for that. And as you would see it in the appendix, if you look at the property, there is some dispute on what the current taxpayers have been mentioning tonight. And again, I mean to do no harm. I'm here to open up or have my own ceramic studio. Again, I've been looking in this area for 4 years and felt like it was a viable studio. When you view the inside of the property, it has been used as a studio for quite some time. It looked like a painting studio. I have a master's degree in ceramics. I taught for 11 years as a professor in Duluth, Minnesota. I've taught at Sierra Vista Community College here. I've taught at the Douglas Community College here. I participated in many things. I would be an asset to this community, part of the Art Council. I lecture nationally. I'm on sabbatical right now, lecturing around the United States. And I just feel like I would be an asset to this community and what I could share, and having just a small part of it would be a treasure. I, again, don't mean to dishearten you in any way or make a bad impression on this community, but I feel like I'm a great candidate for it. The business I had in Minnesota is actually being bought by Intimate Domain by the state of Minnesota, so I have nearly $100,000 just in relocation funding that I can put into this such property.
Councilmember Klein?
I have a question for the city attorney.
Are we allowed to withdraw this property from auction at this time?
That would be a clarification from the city attorney. I would think not.
I would think not, too, because the auction started. However, if there were a matter, for example, matters come up now where the people you're selling land to would own a corner of this property, and perhaps if there's animosity that can be worked out by tabling this issue till the next meeting and working out that maybe a quick claim deed by the other owners, but I'm hesitant to say that the auction that we've started can't proceed because it's been noticed and all of that.
I have another question, please.
One thing. The also, council can still reject
also
bids.
Council, I've traveled for this tonight.
Do we have any other questions or comments from the council? Councilmember Klein.
May I ask a question, though? Is there anything that would keep us from tearing down the garage which belongs to us?
Well, actually, since it's on city property, it doesn't belong to you. It only that piece of it belongs to you. Mm-hmm. That's problematic right there.
All right. Well, we are both artists. We've had that place for 30 years. You came from New York City. You've made a bid on another property, and you say you mean no harm. You're doing harm.
The harm is that people who have indicated that they will purchase this property as soon as we get this matter straight want that studio. He is an artist.
They actually just mentioned that they wanted to tear the studio down for that.
Well, we wanted to tear that studio down so as to make it free and clear.
And now he's mentioning that they want it for the studio. In my understanding, there might not be a clear buyer for that property at this time.
Well, not if it's screwed up. Not if we can't get this rather if we can't buy it?
The buyer is buying the house. The buyer is buying the parcels that we own.
The house is within about 40 feet from such garage that the city owns. And again, I spoke with the city assessors and Joe Ward, and it has been very clear to me that their distinction of what they own is under discussion, and I'm willing to pay to get the site surveyed. And I know I could just make that studio a viable studio, and I have the resources to keep moving forward. And I would offer $3,000 right now for it.
Ms. Carl, did you want to comment again?
Well, I did just want to say it's more than the price of the survey. It would be if you were the winning bidder. And again, the council may reject any bid it wants to for any reason based on the code. But if you were to get the winning bid, you would also have to pay them for their administration costs here for this. And I believe that's in the neighborhood of $371 or something like that.
I am aware of that.
Okay.
I called and spoke with several people asking the questions and wondering if I needed to pay that to proceed to be here tonight.
Ms. Carl, a question.
Yes.
You said that we can reject any bid. Can we also accept any bid? How does that work?
I would move forward as opposed to backward now at this point, because I think that the code says reject any bid as opposed to accept any bid. So I would just feel better about following close in time with the code.
Okay.
We will lose the sale of that house.
That is not true. That is, you cannot say such things to this council that you do not know is to be true.
I do know it's true.
It is not your property. I'm sorry that you were unfortunately paying taxes on it, and if I could help you out in other means, I will surely do and try to feel that you can have value in the tax that you paid on that.
Would you like to buy the house?
I think the house is very, very nice, and I thought there is a parcel behind the property that you guys also own, that I thought about if I was the only one here, that I'd be contacting you and asking you about the house and about that secondary parcel. I'm just saying that. I'm very, very clear of it, of the parcels, because I looked very detailed with the assessors in the assessor's office, and I am willing to negotiate the particular building that I made an offer on has multiple liens, and it has been 4 or 5 months of me, and that specific project doesn't seem like it's going to work through, and I'm meeting with my other agency tomorrow, and hopefully that I can participate in this within this community.
The buyers we have for the house who would like to use the studio, willing to have us tear it down in order to free up that parcel, and then they would build another studio right next to it.
Okay, we have a little difficulty here. We are in a bidding process, and a lot of the information that both sides on this particular issue are taking are not really pertinent to the bidding process.
Mm-hmm. Is her bid
Councilmember
Klein,
did you have a comment?
I do have a question that I've been trying to ask of our city attorney, and you partially answered it when Mr. Sandler and Ms. Hagstrom said that they would tear down their garage in order to clear it up, but you're saying now that they can't do that.
Well, it's on our property. We own the garage, at least most of it. They own a corner of it, and that's been the sticking point. We're responsible. We're liable in a way, right? So to have them even be allowed to come onto that property to tear it down, you know, my concern as an attorney is about liability, and are they tearing it down right? Is that what we want as a city, to have this, you know, this building torn down? I don't know.
Okay, and then we do understand that The circumstances are no fault of their own. This is, and we've had issues like this all over Bisbee just because, property lines or fences have been there, even though that's not what the assessor's office said or whatnot. So in their argument, and I certainly understand it, it sounds more like a civil matter. So if we as a council reject all the bids, that's something that they could work out in civil court and then come back. Because we as the city should not be in the middle of their discussion, and believe me, I understand it, and I understand that Mr. Sandler and Ms. Hagstrom are in this situation through no fault of their own. So it really puts them in quite a pickle, and I think probably the best thing for us as the city is to reject all bids, let them work it out in civil court, or if
excuse
Ms. Bergson has the other bid to another property, if that works out in the meantime. But we are certainly not we are not to be in the middle of a personal issue like that.
Councilmember Dunn, did you have a comment?
Yes, we own the property, so we're going to be in the middle of this no matter what, because we own the property. Is there an option to table this? I mean, I think that I would like to allow these two individuals to try to work this out, because somebody's got to buy out the other for this to work, because you can't buy a house and not own the door.
I second the motion to table if possible.
We have a motion and a second to table.
Mayor? Excuse me. I don't mean to interrupt, but Tanya would like to ask another question before we vote on this. Would that be okay?
I'll allow it.
Thank you.
The city of Bisbee owns the property. So the civil suit would be between them and the city of Bisbee. If you table this, we'll come back and we'll have the same discussion. The dispute isn't between myself and the mistaken couple here. It's between the city of Bisbee and them. You allowed it to go to public auction, and I'm here to bid on the property.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor to table this. At this point in time, I'm going to ask for a vote on this. Ms. Coronado, probably a roll call, though it's appropriate.
Is this permissible?
Excuse me. Is it permissible?
Is it permissible
to table this particular issue?
Yeah, you can reject all bids and table the issue. Everything.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Did that answer your question? We have a motion and a second to table. I think we probably should have a roll call vote on this.
Excuse me, Mayor.
Councilmember Connors.
Do we need to reject the offers first and then table it, or do we table it and then reject the offer?
Good question.
I think it's the former and not the latter.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
We probably then should withdraw the motion in the second, and if we want to proceed down that route, make a motion in the second to withdraw the bid or reject the bid. Does that make sense? Is that right, Ms. Carl? We have a motion and a second on the floor. We need to operate on that or withdraw it.
Yes, so it's an amendment to the motion or else withdrawing the motion. So
I move that we withdraw the motion to table it.
Yes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to withdraw the bid.
The motion to table.
The motion to table. Okay. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion passes. The motion second to table has been now taken off the table. So, do we have a motion to reject all the bids?
I move that we reject all the bids.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to reject all the bids. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously.
No, minus
I guess I'm not here.
Okay, that.
Okay, well.
That case is closed.
We'll do whatever we have to. We're not giving it up, so you might as well get your other. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Are we tabling it? I mean, what's the procedure?
Yeah.
There?
At this point.
Now we.
It's finalized.
You may want to table it at this point.
Okay.
I would think.
Okay. Now, do we have a motion to table?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to table. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
You're
aye.
Trying.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
She's threatening
nay.
I told her I didn't have
a motion passes. This item has now been tabled. Item number 9. Discussion and possible action on the petition received at the January 6, 2015 regular session of Mayor and Council regarding 1. Notice of the amended agenda for the December 16, 2014 council meeting. 2. Verification of the date, time, and location of the officially required public notification for any agenda and discussion regarding making the agenda public 1 week before a council meeting. 3. Discussion and evaluation of the purpose of the monies received from the Department of Homeland Security's Stone Garden grant. We have 2 people signed up for this. Maggie Kuhanek.
Hi, my name is Maggie Kohanek, and I'm wondering if we can table this item and discuss it when it's not such a long meeting and have more time for discussion. I felt pretty beat up, and I waited to be able to say my piece, but I'm just wondering if that would be a possibility.
I normally try to put petitions on the agenda as quickly as possible, and you did have some questions, and I have an answer for each one of them. And so I'm not really sure why you would want to wait on that.
I'm
addressing the petition that was presented to the council.
I can certainly continue, but I had asked for table because of the length of the meeting.
Yeah.
If you don't believe that is in later to the meeting?
No.
Donna, why don't you come up and say what you wanted to say?
Donna Pulling.
Thank you, Mayor. It's been a long meeting, and I think that we'd like to have some significant discussion on this, and so we're asking that maybe it be just put on at a later time on the agenda.
I'm thinking
that...
A later...
I don't
want to
wait. Okay.
Well, this is ultimately up to the council, but my thoughts are we need to move on this petition, and I address those quickly, and... certainly
okay.
A lot of people were here. They could have stayed if they wanted to, but I know it was late.
I
understand that.
So I should go ahead and address the council.
Certainly.
I think it's been shown really clearly that more people want to be involved in what happens with the council. I know I'm just recently more interested, and I find that the way that those items are announced is not really in the spirit of cooperation for people in the community. If these things are put on the agenda 24 hours in advance, and you have to have a computer in order to be able to see that, whether it's a glitch or not, if you have to get into a building, if you have to come to this building, I'm just addressing the council because the spirit of this law is to get more people participating in what's happening with our government. And what I would like to see mostly is that we look at, can it be possible that we put agenda items on earlier than 24 hours, and then we need to be really, really careful about where we post those, and it's very knowledgeable in the community where they can find that information out if they don't have computers. Does it give them enough time to go to the library and look at that, or here? I just would like to look at how we allow people to know what's going on with our city. I think we addressed the third item pretty carefully, and I don't think that needs to be discussed again personally, but those were the items.
For it, though.
Okay. That's what I wanted to say.
Okay.
Thank you.
Certainly, your points are well taken. I appreciate that. My responsibility is to address the petition, and that's what I'm going to do without objection from the council. What I would do is I will ask the question, and then we'll answer myself, which is actually you. So that's how we're going to proceed. The first question on the petition was, we, the undersigned members of the public, believe there was a lack of required notice of the amended agenda
for the December 16, 2014 City Council meeting, and we believe this to be a violation of the open meeting law according to ARS 38-431.02-10. We request that the three agenda items, numbers 11, 12, and 13 on said agenda, be declared null and void due to this violation of state open meeting law. My answer is, and we have to suppose they have to take action, this concern through the ratification process has been addressed this evening. Number two, we request a verification of the date, time, and locations of the officially required public notification for any agenda as well as amended agendas of the Bisbee City Council meeting. We also request a discussion and action of making the agenda public at least 1 week prior to the actual City Council meeting. This answer is a little longer. There is not a set date for posting notices and agendas because the council has special sessions, work sessions, and public meetings. These can occur at any time as long as the notice and agenda is posted 24 hours in advance. The regular session notices and agendas are posted on the Friday before the Tuesday council session at City Hall. Notices are also posted at both post offices. As a courtesy, not required by law, the agenda is posted at the library, Channel 5, and by email. Amended notices and agendas must be posted 24 hours in advance at the locations previously stated. The city has ordered a case to be outside of City Hall for 24-hour viewing. This should be available for viewing, agendas, and notices within a couple of weeks. Also, notices are posted in December at various locations for the yearly schedule of regular council sessions. In regards to the petition request by making the agenda public 1 week prior to council meetings would prove to be impractical because staff submits most of the various items on the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday before the council session, with a lot of it coming in on Wednesday. This would mean that many items would have to wait for almost 3 weeks to be addressed by the council, and this delay would mean an interruption of business that needs to be addressed. Question number three. We would like the public to have an opportunity to discuss and evaluate the purpose of the monies received from the United States Department of Homeland Security via the Stone Garden grants to the City of Bisbee. This petition proposal was discussed in the work session and hopefully answers the various questions the petitioners wanted to know. Now, if the council, any council member has any comments, they're certainly welcome to express them. The council member Hansen?
I am still concerned about the transparency. I'm concerned about the public feeling like they are not being given the adequate time to review what is going on with the agendas. So therefore, I move that the mayor and council, along with the city attorney and city manager, develop procedures for the city of Bisbee and include the open meeting laws, and this be added to the city code.
Ms. Carl, I don't think this is more like addressing a petition, and it's not an agenda item for a motion to vote on something. Is that correct?
Actually, the rule is whether something's reasonably related to the agenda item. And if something's reasonably related, it doesn't have to be spelled out in a motion first. You have the flexibility to take action that's reasonably related to the agenda item so that the public knows what could go on or what action might be taken. This agenda item says discussion and possible action on the petition, and it sounds like the petition, from your reading of it, was looking for something to be done, and so this would be a reasonably related motion if that was the motion being made.
Okay, I can respect that. However, we answered each and every item of the petition with the action. The action already verified the questions on that. But I'm not opposed to what you're doing. I'm just stating my point of law.
But there's other actions that can be taken aside from what you said.
Right.
And that's simply what I'm trying to do, is to have it more clarified and have set procedures so that we don't have the problem that we had again. A lot of actions have been taken by the city clerk and by the city manager in order to be more transparent, but I think we need to put this down in writing in one place in the city code. There are other towns and cities that do have procedures for the city council meetings in their city code,
And I don't see why we cannot, as a city, sit down and decide this is the way we want to do it so that the public knows exactly what we're doing.
Okay, so this would be a situation where we would discuss possible alternatives to create more transparency. Is that what you're saying?
It's to put down the procedures for the city council itself and also to promote the transparency.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Councilmember Klein.
Just a question. So are you wanting to change the time frame that we have by law to notice it? Are you asking rather than 24 hours that it be further out? I don't understand.
I'm asking for the council and the mayor to look at the procedures to see if possible. Maybe we don't want to put on agenda items that are not emergency agenda items 24 hours before the council. I know I didn't have enough time, and I think it really inconveniences not only the public, but the council members. Some of us don't have the history on some of these things. And to get an agenda item on Monday night and have to vote on it on Tuesday night, I really don't think is enough time. And I think it does us a disservice when that happens, when it doesn't need to happen.
Okay, so your motion is basically we will have a discussion of modifying the time of posting agendas and notices. No.
I would like to see a... Right now, what is in the city code is simply a regurgitation, for lack of a better word, of what is in the open meeting laws. I think we can do a better job of spelling it out and making it more concise and clarify it for the public. To include, when the notices. I mean, I had trouble trying to figure out where the notices were and where the agendas were supposed to be. And I never did find where the agendas were supposed to be posted. And all it says is, well, it's, as stated or whatever's decided. I can't remember what the exact terminology was. Mm-hmm. And that was in the open meeting laws. I think we need to be more precise. And I think it needs to be in one place.
Point of order.
What's that?
Point of order. There's a motion on the table. Without a second, there should be no discussion.
No, we can have a motion and a second continue discussion.
Yes.
I always do that.
There's no second. Motion.
But there was no second.
There was no second.
Oh, okay. Excuse me.
I second the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Ms. Coronado, let's take a roll
call. Excuse me, Mayor.
Would
you please repeat the motion?
Ms. Hansen, would you please repeat the motion?
I move that the mayor and council, along with the city attorney and city manager, develop procedures for the city of Bisbee and include open meeting laws to be added to the city code.
We have a motion and a second.
Can I make another motion?
Oh, well, we have to. Yeah. You can amend this one if you want.
I would like to amend that motion after a work session is done, after we invite the public in, because I don't want to be hoisted on my own petard on this the night that I promised my constituents to invite them into a process. I would like to amend Councilmember Hansen's motion to include a work session prior to moving forward.
I second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Amending the first motion and second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously.
You're welcome. It's a good motion.
Item number 10.
Point of order. Don't we now have to vote on the amended motion?
We voted on the amended motion.
We voted on the amendment.
You started with the amended motion, which is how it should be.
Okay. It incorporates vote. Is that correct?
Yeah. All inclusive.
Item number 10, discussion and possible action, public hearing regarding the community development block
grant funds for fiscal year 2015 to select a project to submit to the Arizona Department of Housing for the fiscal year 2015.
Ms. Carbajal. Mr. Johnson, excuse me.
Sorry, just real quick. As you all, Mayor, members of the council, as you all are aware, we've had several public meetings as it relates to the Community Development Block Grant. You know, during that process, we got a little bit of feedback, but Mr. Klimek, as well as Karina and Bonnie from CDOT, also here to kind of take us forward to the next step in the process. There are a number of projects that have been listed, and some we've already, to a degree, started doing some research on. And so with that said, I'll turn it over to Karina. She can take the discussion from here.
Good evening. Presented to us at the last public hearings that we had two, they were listed 9 possible CDBG fund projects that we could have. They were flood control design, drainage system, system evaluation, elevator in the city hall, a bus cutout and accessibility for Tarrytown, removal of abandoned cars, revitalization of low-income housing, small drainage channel project in Bakerville, and a removal of unsafe structures and abandoned homes in certain areas. With those, what we did was set up a rubric, which I sent to everyone, and we were able to, at the last CDBG meeting held in Benson about a couple weeks ago, actually about a week ago, we were able to narrow down these fields. The Tarrytown projects, there was two, one for the road going into Tarrytown and the bus cutout for Tarrytown for the homeless shelter. We were able to combine that into one project. The Bakerville project and also the Warren Jitch area with the drainage system, we were able to combine those two. By doing that, we eliminated a couple projects, but in the discussion with CDBG and Tony and actually it was Kathy, we discovered that a couple of these projects were ineligible for CDBG funds. The ones that were ineligible at this time, a system evaluation planning study of Old Bisbee Fire Suppression System and the removal of abandoned cars. Now, the ones that left were the elevator in City Hall, but that project alone was just estimating the project was over the amount of money that we were going to possibly be awarded. I have to state this. The award amounts have not been set yet. That goes in the future. They changed the way we were doing the CDBG funds and when you would be selecting your projects, and now we're selecting prior to knowing what the award amount is. So that's the big change there. But from what we anticipate to get, that is over budget, so we can't go there. Now, the removal of unsafe structures and revitalization of low-income housing, both of these are tied into the income. The owner has to be income qualified. And if you do the revitalization of low-income housing, you're looking at anywhere between $5,000 and $35,000 per house. And every single person has to be income qualified. But if we go to the maximum, say, rebuilding or helping somebody bring up to standard their housing, once you go in there and you realize that they need new wires and everything, you might only be able to get 2 or 3 projects out of this. And since CDBG funds no longer cycles every 2 years, but every 3 years, you're looking at maybe 1 or 2 houses every three or four years. Now, the removal of unsafe structures, we're looking throughout all of town in the areas that we could, and they income qualified, maybe possibly about $80,000 maximum that you would need, and so you're losing out on a big chunk of the money because we're not able to select more than one project. So that's where these ones are going. Now, the flood control design improvements and construction for the Bakerville and the Warren Ditch area, this is a $1 million project. In order for us to be able to show improvement on that $1 million project, having it spaced out over 3 years, maybe the first part removing possibly some houses out of the flood zone, and then going forward, it won't show that much improvement going over for 3 years. So that one we saw as staff, we didn't see that as being the most pertinent. The most important part about this, though, is a grant fund that's coming up. It's called the Colonia. And it's a very good possibility we can apply for that for the full funding over $1 million. So we're looking at as staff into doing that. And that's coming up in the next few months. And we're going to be meeting with CDBG actually in a couple weeks to gauge if we're able to really go forward with this. That leaves a Tarrytown project. Now, the Tarrytown project also for the street improvements and drainage improvements would be a $1 million project. However, like, basically, you can go in pieces. And the first piece for this particular project would include the, and I handed out the maps for you to see, just that little inlet road, because it is a minimum amount of money for this one. So it might only include the first road and the entryway and a cutout for the homeless shelter. And we have been awarded through the ADOT grants the shelter. So I do have funding for the shelter. So it would be just basically the road work for that and the drainage project. So is there, and do you have any other questions?
No, thank you. I just, I have a question, and maybe the council does too. I know the fire, the Old Bisbee Fire Suppression System is not eligible for this.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is an extremely serious issue, and I had some conversations with Mr. Klimak on that. And we need to look to get to a study or whatever we need to do. It is essential. I don't know what else to say. We need to get started on that for sure.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. I didn't hear the first part of that. Which project were you talking about?
Oh, well, it's not eligible. It's the fire suppression system in Old Bisbee.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's a very serious issue, and hopefully it can be addressed maybe sometime this year, at least for a study on it.
We're really looking for money for that. That's our top
priority. As far as the city is concerned, in my opinion, it is a serious top priority to get that addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions from the council on this?
Just a comment. Since it seems like really the only one that really qualifies is the Tin Town project,
right.
I think that kind of be great for it to go along with, you know, what we're doing there presently, and the fact that it's going to have the bus cut out, because we have a lot of folks, you know, from the
mm-hmm.
shelter there that mm-hmm. use that, and I think that's very important. And I appreciate all the work that you've done in looking at, you know, everything individually and giving us all the information.
Any other comments from the council?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Well, certainly during the hearing I spoke in behalf of a smaller scale drainage project that would basically, in this last deluge that we had, there were certainly a number of people who had water runoff in their yards and their homes, and I would like to address those.
Mm-hmm. And we put that in with the Warren Ditch project because it's the same area,
mm-hmm.
and looking at the grabbing the big funding that we're going to go after the big funding for the Colonia, that's going to be part of that. And we talked to Kathy and at the ADOH, and they do say you can tie it in there because it is part of the whole Bakerville Park phase that we are working on. So that is possible to have it as part of our Colonia application.
Council Member
Sullivan.
Not
speak that out. Oh, yeah. Was there any consideration of doing any stormwater mitigation or road repair in the Zacatecas Canyon? At this time, because all of Bisbee still is at, this is a good and bad thing, but and like I mentioned at the last meeting, Bisbee is at 48% as low to moderate. It actually increased in poverty size, I guess, in order to meet that, but it's not at the 51%. If we do in the next 3 years go over into the 51%, then everywhere in Bisbee would qualify.
So only certain areas qualify?
At this time, yes.
Okay.
And we could do spot surveys, but whatever, you would have needed to mention that at a hearing, the public hearings prior to this particular meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But going forward, we have our cycle, again, for the CDBG monies is now 3 years, so it does come around very fast.
Any other questions from the council? I'm going to open this a public hearing. Is there any discussion by members of the public in support of the items? Is there any discussion by members of the public in opposition to the items? Did the city clerk receive any written communication filed with the city clerk's office?
No, sir.
I will now close this public hearing. Any further discussion from the council?
I just want to say that I really support the project in Tin Town.
I second the emotion.
I'm not sure.
These bookends.
let's do this over. I think it needs to be a little more explicit. I'll make a motion for the street and drainage improvements in Tin Town combined with the bus cutout
serving the homeless population in Tintown. Okay, we have a motion and a second.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously.
Item number 11, discussion of possible approval of resolution R-15-01 to authorize the submission of an application for CDBG funds for the selected project. And Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mayor. As we just discussed, the item has been approved, and this is just subsequently the need to get council approval to submit the resolution itself.
Thank you. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve resolution R-15-01, authorizing the submission of an application for CDBG funding to the Arizona Department of Housing for the fiscal year 2015 on the selected project.
Second.
We have a motion and a second.
Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously.
Item number 12, discussion and possible direction to staff regarding the City of Bisbee's participation in the Arizona Debt Set-Off Program. City Finance Director, Ms. Buono.
Good evening again. Are we ready for another presentation?
Oh. Yep.
Yes.
Okay, I have a couple quick slides. I just wanted to do a quick overview that leads into the debt set-off program. The first thing that we're looking at, I have given you a hard copy. I think Ashley pulled them out of your boxes if you didn't have them. One of the first things I wanted to go over was the total number of sewer and garbage customers that we have, 3,053. The normal residential rate is sewer is $47.60, and $17.08 is for the garbage, and the recycling fee of 51 cents for a total of $65.19. The other two, I just wanted to show that we do have low income rates available, and it's, I think it's up to 15 if they make less than $15,000, and then half of that. So the 3913 would be applicable to the low income, and then half, the next half would be when they only make a half of the half. Okay, we have some pretty pressing issues with our unpaid accounts. Our accounts receivable right now is sitting at $1.8 million. Of that $1.8, $1.4 million are leaned properties, and those represent 282 customers. A real quick breakdown, four accounts are over $20,000. One is at $50,000. 35 accounts are between 10 and 20. 59 are between 5 and 10 grand, and 149 between 1 and 5, and the rest are under 1,000. The benefit of revenue collection is this is an approach that we want to take. We're trying to maintain the sewer and trash rates. Mr. Johnson indicated to me that he did not want to raise those. Those have been raised every year, and it ranges between 4 and 8%. So this is an option to that. We need to address these issues. I'm sorry. Thank you, Bobby. One of the ways to do it is through revenue collection. This is the Arizona Debt Set-Off Program. And basically what it is the state allows us to put a claim on anybody's state income tax return for any type of debt owed to the city. It doesn't have to be leaned. It can be business licenses. It can be sewer and garbage. It can be late fees, it can be ambulance, I mean, anything that we are owed. This program was expanded in the year 2011 to include cities and towns. It's been in place for a long time, but it just expanded to cities and towns. And we can collect any debt from the city, and the offsets can be against both individuals and businesses. I want to just run down the process real quick. Submit a claim up to the state. The claims are assigned to priority. Child support always comes first, court debt, and then all others. Once the state will notify the city when there's a match on a claim, and we will send a letter to the taxpayer informing them of their rights. The taxpayer has 30 days to protest, and they protest directly to the city. For each match, whether or not we collect on it, there's a $9 fee.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Is that the extent of the fee?
Yes, $9. And a lot of cities, they pass that through, but that takes additional. We need to rework our fees at a later date. So if we can just collect some of this, it's worth the $9. The account selection criteria that is account balances due, past due 90 days. I want to flag all commercial customers first, no matter what. Then I want to focus on, because of the limited resources we have, those accounts that are between 1 and 5,000. Those are customers, there's 208 of them, that's where I think the bulk of our money is. And those are customers that I think are living, it's not abandoned property, that they're actually there and that we could collect some money on those. And then eventually we will work up to all others with past due balances. Taxpayer safeguards. If a refund is claimed in error, it's refunded to them with interest. I think it's about 4%. I need to check that. If it's a refund is claimed in error by the city due to incorrectly identifying the taxpayer, in other words, I claimed on I meant, you know, this Sam and flagged another Sam, then not only are we refunded, but we have interest and there's penalties. And there's certain milestones with that. The penalties range from 15 to 20% of the captured offset. And the purpose of this is not to tie up taxpayers' claims. And they also have an injured spouse provision for the joint tax returns, and that will work as long as it's, the property's not owned with both names on it. I learned about this program about 2 years ago when I went to one of my first finance director conferences. And 91 incorporated cities and towns, 33 have joined. I just spoke with the Arizona Department of Revenue about this and taking advantage of the program. There's a quick list of them there. I don't need to rattle them all off, but Douglas and Wilcox and Sierra Vista, Tucson's coming on board because they're a non-program city. Wilcox just joined. I even talked to Patagonia. They use it, not actively, but you know they do use it. So there's a lot of them in southeast Arizona. The claims of the revenue. Douglas, they get about $23,000 a year using this process. Sierra Vista, they went on it last year because I watched them as we went through this process because they got some pushback from the constituents. So what I did is we advertised it. We put a public notice. I put it in the Observer on Tuesday, the review on Sunday. This isn't a requirement to do that, but I wanted to let the taxpayers know that we are looking at this program and it would be discussed tonight, so if they had any input, that they would have the opportunity. What will happen is they'll probably start contacting us once their tax returns start getting flagged. Because the whole point of doing this at this point is people file their taxes from January to March. So I'd wanted to do this last year, but I couldn't accomplish that. So it needs to be in place for us to take full benefit of it this year. Wilcox only collected $55. She's a new finance director. Well, she just started in August. People don't file their taxes till the following year. So I think she'll see much more activity. So at this point, you know, I'm available, you know, if you have any questions, but we would really like to have direction from council to whether or not you support this program. Do you want me to go through with this program?
I do not oppose this particular program. We talked in private about this a week or so ago. So the questions that council might have, Sierra Vista collected, what was it, $45,000, $46,000?
Yeah, $46,000 in their first year.
Let's say they're 10 times bigger than we are.
Yes.
So would that mean if we were following the same statistics percentage-wise of Sierra Vista, we would collect about 4,500, I would imagine. My question, and you answered it already, I'm just asking it for the public and the council, is staff time, would that chew up that 4,500?
No, I don't think so. There's a couple of things that you can do to minimize it. You don't have to update it constantly. If I put up today's balances, not too many people get that large of a return from the state.
Right.
So what will happen is when the state contacts me with a match, we go in, we look at it, do a complete account analysis on it to make sure that it's valid, and then I accept or reject. I can release the money right back to them if something had changed. Say I flagged them and they paid everything off. You know, at this point, our collection rate, I think that it sends a couple messages. Is if we're going to flag their tax returns, their state tax returns, then maybe they'll start paying their bills for services that they're receiving.
If they can.
If they can. We're not going to go forward with anything as far as the lien property, because the liens are in place. But now what we need to look at is getting the cash flow moving. And one of the things that the auditors talked to you about this year was that we had to write off a large amount because there's liens out there that we're continuing to bill on, and they view them as uncollectible. Because what happens is if we just keep billing, we're inflating our revenue. So it's really hard to get a true picture of what's really going on out at the sewer plant as far as managing it as a business. I had talked to Mr. Johnson about coming forward this year. We need to make some decisions and discuss with the council. We need to make some changes on how we bill things and how we disconnect things. The biggest thing that I felt this year was the storm. We had interruption of service. And if you go back through the code, and I've done it a zillion times reading it, I have no mechanism to legally stop billing unless the house is burned completely down and it doesn't exist. So, you know, a lot of the things, you know, it's based on connections, not the number of people that live in the house. There's all kinds of things that we need to explore. We don't need to do it tonight, though. But at this point, that's what I would like to receive from council and Mr. Johnson, too, is how would you like us? Would you like us to utilize this program?
Councilmember Sullivan, did you have a question?
Oh, I had one small question in regards to who we can put claims on. What does that mean?
Oh, the fire is the ambulance services.
So not the city of Bisbee, obviously, but the Arizona Ambulance?
No, not Arizona Ambulance. We have do interfacility transfers, and we also go out and pick up transport. I don't know, EMS is what they call it. Where's my fire chief? And some of those are uncollectible bills. Not everybody can pay. A lot of it's written off based on insurance. And we actually have a contract with Frye Fire Department. They do most of that. We can do that. That's where the majority that Sierra Vista got their money from was from the ambulance. But I'm not looking at that yet. I'd like to see how it works on our sewer and garbage.
And are there any other options for looking at this issue that you know of?
Not really. We lien, we don't foreclose. Council direction is not, we have the right to do that. We can go in and take a property, but that's not the intent. What we're doing is when we lien properties, the criteria is 90 days out or $500. And then what happens if the property ever needs to be refinanced or sold, the city's interest is protected. We get paid first. There are situations that doesn't happen when these properties go and they sell at the courthouse for property taxes. When they sell for property tax, then all of pre-existing liens are all written off at that time. It takes a long time to get to that process.
Someone might say, because I believe that we have a 10% penalty on owed monies to the city,
mm-hmm.
Some people might say, and it's compounded, some people might say, why don't you just leave it there? And we talked about it earlier, mm-hmm. and you had an answer for me on that one. Why should we proceed and not collect this 10% every year? For example, the $50,000 one, that's $5,000 a year extra they're paying. It's compounded. What's a good answer of why we should just let it lay there and build up $10 million?
Because it won't necessarily won't collect on it. What'll happen? Chances are real good if when we're at that level, they're not paying their property taxes also. Mm-hmm. Usually they just don't pick, I don't want to pay the city of Bisbee. Usually there's other financial reasons and resources. And it takes the foreclosure of the state to, or the Cochise County to step in and they sell it. And they don't always sell. People don't always want them. They cost more to fix up. We have several abandoned properties around town. And like I said, that's really for a later work session. I want to go in and disconnect with the understanding that if we decide that we have to disconnect, the house and the people living in it have to leave immediately. So we've never gotten to that point yet. What I want to talk about, and Mr. Klimek and Mr. Johnson's very aware of it, we'll talk about, you know, abandoned properties. I think it's time that we start addressing those issues, and we want to move towards that. And then it'll stop it from billing. But if there's a connection to the sewer, I can't stop it from billing.
Councilmember Klein.
Yeah, this is one issue that it comes up all the time. Mm-hmm. And what we hear from, you know, most of the people out there is, you know, I have to pay my fair share. Why doesn't so-and-so have to pay their fair share? And several years back, I think it was Mayor Porter, he was ready to go and, you know, shut everybody off, and at that point it becomes inhabitable, and you know. I don't think the rest of us really wanted to take drastic measures like that, but we do have to do something to wrangle in some of this, but that's the biggest thing is, you know, I pay my share, why can't everybody pay their share? And we do have programs in place that do help the low income. So, I mean, that's really not an excuse. But I don't know.
I have one more comment.
It's a tough...
That I did mention. What we do is a policy that if they sign a promissory note, it'll reduce their interest rate down to 5% and remove, it's a $3 a month fee. It removes that. The criteria for that program is that you have to make the current month's bill and add something to the balance. And we define it, we get with them, and we talk about it. If it's another $5 or $10, they just have to meet the basic. Now what happens is if they miss it, and some of them do, then it goes back to 10%. And we still have, the city's interest is protected in case the property ever sells. And we do collect on liens. I didn't have a number for you tonight, but I meant to go in and look at that. But we do collect on them. I'm not going to say we're going to collect $1.4 million, but, you know, we do see some results of that process that's in place.
Once again, did you have a question, Councilmember Dunn?
I'm just a little bit confused. The only way we would collect is if the person had a state income tax refund.
Correct.
And we would need to file a $9 fee, and you were looking at 208 customers. That would be $1,800 we'd have to invest to get.
No. The $9 only counts if there's a match. In other words, what will happen is when they file their tax return, it'll pop up at the Arizona Department as a match.
They have a refund.
Refund, and I put a claim in for the refund. At that time, we would, like I said, look at it. Once I already have a dollar amount in there, I can't change it. It's not like, oh, well, they owe me another $60. But the chances are the refund won't be as high as what they owe me, owe us.
Right.
So I'm just grateful to have anything. And then if there's a balance due, I just leave it there, and the next go around it goes. You don't have to change it. It can just sit there. But it also gives us the opportunity to correct it. Say if somebody happened and they paid their debt and I still had the flag on, then I could release it like that because it's all electronic. I can manage this all online.
You have a question? Councilmember Sullivan.
I move to recommend that the city of Bisbee participate in the debt set-off program.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion, ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
Item number 13.
discussion of possible approval of entering into a streetlight energy agreement between the Arizona Public Service, APS, company and the City of Bisbee for the use of powering the streetlights
throughout the City of Bisbee. Mr. Tom Klimak, Public Works Director.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council members. Good evening. This is the first agreement before you of three. I've actually asked to be tabled tonight for next meeting because we received a call later this afternoon that APS had given us an erroneous number. It was off by 4 cents. So we're withholding that. The first item here, item number 13, Public Works Department recommends entering into a streetlight energy agreement between the Arizona Public Service Company for the use of powering the city's streetlights, City of Bisbee. The last time the City of Bisbee and APS had an agreement, it was December 20th, 1990. So it's been 25 years since we've entered into or updated our agreements with APS. Ms. Peg Jellin is with us this evening. She's from APS. She's the Area Operations Manager, so she's here to answer any questions should you have any. I think one of the things that's important to point out here is that in the last 25 years, just in the energy portion of the streetlights, that cost will increase about 38%. Now, putting it all in, putting it as one package, and I'll talk about the other agenda items as they come about. But all in all, in the last 25 years, all of our energy costs, when you look at the power pole agreements, the energy light agreements, along with the license, you're looking at about a 50% increase. So that's about 2% per year, which is really it's a number that we've been aware of, and we actually used it on another project, our solar project, incorporated a 2.1, I believe, factor for increases each year from APS. So the numbers do fit based on some historical work that we've done. So with that being said, I'm recommending highly that we do this. And the City of Bisbee, the language that is in this contract was reviewed by our city attorney. She had a handful of changes, which they made, with the exception of one. It was an and versus an or. And when we tried to push our city attorney's recommendation, we were told it's non-negotiable. So all in all, I think as a team, we've done a pretty good job in looking this over. This same contract also is being applied uniformly across all the service areas that APS serves statewide here in Arizona. They're trying to get everybody under one umbrella. And with that, I'm open to questions.
Any questions from the council? Councilmember Connors.
Thank you, Mayor. Tom, is there any way that you could get APS to not come back here for 25 more years with another maintenance agreement?
I'm good.
I'll sign
not,
it right
I'm
now.
I'm good, but not that good.
I'll sign it right now.
Unless we ask Peg to take a long vacation.
See you in 25 years?
I won't be here in 25
years. Any other questions from the council?
Yes, would you clarify what is policy in disconnecting streetlights? We've talked about this before, but...
On the disconnection of streetlights?
We're always talking about, do we need all the streetlights? Do we need more? Do we need less?
Well, that's always a controversial issue because in some instances we'll have a handful of neighbors that will request a light be removed, and we do that, and someone then turns around and requests that we put it back on. And we have some that make a request in a localized area, one request to take out the light, and then we've got three or four others within the proximity of that light, and they really need it because it's part of their staircase to their homes. Unfortunately, it shines right into somebody's bedroom and someone's living room, and they like keeping the drapes open. In that case, sometimes the lights get painted, okay? So then we have to go back and correct those. But generally, when there's a request made, we call APS. They'll put in an order to remove it. But we try to make sure that before we go down that path that we talk to the neighbors in the local area, make sure that we have a general consensus. And so far that's worked. But it takes about 3 months to get a light either turned on or turned off, and also to be repaired.
Any other questions from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve entering into a streetlight energy agreement between the Arizona Public Service APS Company and the City of Bisbee for the use of powering the streetlights throughout the City of Bisbee.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? No further discussion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Item number 14, discussion of possible approval of entering into a streetlight maintenance agreement between the Arizona Public Service APS Company and the City of Bisbee for the maintenance of streetlights throughout the City of Bisbee.
Once again, Tom Plymack, Public Works Director.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. Again, the Public Works Department recommends entering into the streetlight maintenance agreement with Arizona Public Service Company for the maintenance of our streetlights throughout the City of Bisbee. Again, repeating myself from the previous agenda item, again, this goes back to December 20th, 1990. It's the last time that we had an agreement in place for the maintenance of our streetlights. This contract represents an annual increase in the amount of about $19,373.40. It does not make reference to the taxes or fees, but generally we're looking at about a 10% increase on top of the $19,373. And that's reflected on, and the calculations actually reflected on page 8 of this agreement. And we've attached the annual breakdown provided by Mr. Stephen Chassie, who's the account manager for APS.
Any questions from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move that we enter into a streetlight maintenance agreement between Arizona Public Service APS Company and the City of Bisbee for the maintenance of streetlights throughout the City of Bisbee,
Arizona.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Item number 15 has been pulled off the agenda. We will go to item number 16, discussion and possible approval to enter into a contract with Alta Land Survey Incorporated of Benson, Arizona, to perform a boundary survey on the Mansfield for a total cost not to exceed $3,600. Once again, Mr. Tom Plymack, Public Works Director.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. We've discussed this item in the past about sole source work, hiring contractors, surveyors, professional services. In this instance, we're looking at surveying a piece of property. It's city property. It's pretty much at the lower end of Maxfield Road, which or Maxfield Street, which you know is behind the old Bisbee High School, one of the county administration buildings. At the very end of that street, our property is literally used as a means of ingress and egress for people to turn around when they get down to the very bottom of the street. It's in exceptionally poor condition. I mean, exceptionally is usually a positive word, but in this case, it's in very poor shape. I received a letter today from a Miss Sheila Riley, who happens to live down at the very end of Maxfield. And I'm going to share that letter with our city manager, and I'll also talk with Andy Heratic about it as well. There's actually a strip of land next to our property, and that's why it's important for us to know where our property is, which allows for public ingress and egress. And we really need to know what that strip is and how it parallels our property so that we don't go on to Ms. Sheila Riley's property. So it's important that we be able to tie down the locations of the property corners and then make an effort to install a new sidewalk there. It's really pitiful. I mean, we've got sandbags filling in holes that people are supposed to walk on. That's how bad it is. So I'm highly recommending that we do this. And it's been, you know, this has been discussed for a long time.
Any questions from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move that we enter into a contract with Alta Land Survey Incorporated of Benson, Arizona, to perform a boundary survey on the Mansfield lot for a total cost not to exceed $3,600.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clement. Item number 17, discussion and possible approval to purchase one gas V8 4x2 and one gas V8 4x4 pickup truck from Don Sanderson Ford for the recycling department for a total cost not to exceed $66,510.54. Andy Heretic.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. I get my presentation ready here. As you know, we have two new council people, and I kind of wanted to go over with you real quick. Sanitation is an enterprise fund. In the state of Arizona, there are enterprise funds. These funds these public utilities are set up to be self-sustaining. The $17.86 that we collect a month in sanitation, which is the second lowest garbage rate in Cochise County. It's the first lowest rate when you consider the services that we offer. And we do not do regular increases on that account, in that sanitation fund. We wait every 2 or 3 years before we ever have an increase. This enterprise fund it pays for all of its expenses. It pays for all of the it pays all of its own employee taxes, it pays its own liability insurance, it pays all of its ASRS out of the fund. Sanitation does not take a nickel, a penny out of the general fund. It's completely self-supporting. So a couple of years ago, before Public Works Director Russell McConnell left, the mayor and council agreed to a 1% set aside of all revenues from sanitation to go to a vehicle replacement plan. And this was a unique plan at the time because the city and its enterprise funds has never, I shouldn't say never, probably for the last 20 years has not purchased a new vehicle. We only take vehicles that are used from the police department, or we buy them out of the vehicle lots or the impound lots. Last year, a year and a half ago, we were able to buy a new garbage truck for over $100,000. And for the first time in the city's history, we bought a new garbage truck and paid cash. So we are back today with the combination of that 1% and the revenue that we collect on recycling. And we were able to come to you today and let you know that Don Sanderson Ford is a state contractor. We didn't have to go to bid for these vehicles. This is really interesting. The automatic discount on these trucks was $9,000 per truck because we're on state contracting. So we're actually able to go to a state contractor and buy these two pickup trucks for $66,510.54. Now, one of these is a 4x4, and that's very important for the city because, as you all know, when we do drilling and mucking, we have to get that giant trailer with the rock on it up to Old Bisbee. We have a pickup truck that we use now. It was given to us from the police department. That truck has 193,000 miles on it. It's still hauling the rock, but this will be our backup because we'll still have to get that rock up to Old Bisbee every year for drilling and mucking. So this is some of the intricacies in why we buy and how we buy. And that's important. That rock is important, and that trailer's huge. That trailer mounts in the bed of the pickup truck. So here we are. We've accumulated about $88,000 in that fund, and so I'm here to request today the purchase of these two new pickup trucks for the recycling project in the amount of $66,510.54. And if you agree to this, you'll be able to come see them first thing Friday morning because there's a delivery service with these trucks. They'll drive them right down for us.
Any question or comments from the council?
A comment. Andy, are you familiar with Sisyphus?
No.
Are you pushing a rock up a hill and just?
No.
Have fun with your new trucks.
Yes.
Any other question or comments?
What is the status of our other needs? I mean, I thought in talking with you that the garbage trucks were the most serious need at this point in time in terms of trucks.
Our large garbage trucks. The cost on a garbage truck is about $250,000. Garbage trucks are very complicated machines. They're all hydraulic. I still owe money on one of my trucks. So until that truck is paid for, I don't want to get into buying a big garbage truck. When we're ready to buy a big new garbage truck. I think that's a conversation. That's another conversation we have to have as a city. We are buying garbage trucks that cost a minimum of $250,000, and a truck that I still owe some money on, or that the city still owes some money on, has now been out of service for 5 weeks for a part. When I get ready to get out of those big trucks, we're going to do something very different in the city to collect garbage, because it's really difficult for, you know, I have three large trucks. I need one. And the most reliable truck I have is 27 years old, but it doesn't have the equipment on it to pick up rollouts and dumpsters. The two newer trucks have that equipment. The trucks that those two trucks that we have, they're impact trucks. We bought that truck about 7 years ago, and it was the third impact truck that the city had purchased in its history. The company went into bankruptcy, and it's been a real struggle getting parts and keeping parts on those trucks. So while those trucks are important, I don't know that I want to go back to that style of truck again in the city of Bisbee. We are continuously moving into rollouts, and we're putting more and more rollouts throughout the city, and that takes a different truck than the large trucks that we use now. One of the things you'll notice about our dumpsters, you'll notice about our city, while I would like a bigger garbage truck, we're one of the few cities left in the state that picks up dumpsters from the side. Most large garbage trucks pick up the trucks from the front of the truck. They approach the dumpster and they lift it over the cab of the truck. There's no room to do that here in Bisbee. There's no room downtown to put those kinds of trucks or those kinds of dumpsters. So these side-mounted trucks are they're difficult to work with. We have a truck that's referred to as a candy cane. There are two large candy cane pieces of metal on the side of the truck, and they look like candy canes. And they pick the garbage up, and they swing the dumpster over, and they put it back. So while I would like a new garbage truck, and that'll probably be what we'll look at next. All my current trucks will be paid off in 2 years, and at that point, I'll have enough money. The fund will have enough money to then go out and purchase a different kind of garbage truck. Those trucks are relatively new. One of them is 8 years old, and one of them is 10 years old, and they don't have a lot of hours on them. We've cut our garbage routes down in the mechanized routes to one day a week. So they'll be worth something in a trade-in, but when we get ready to trade those in, they have to all go at one time.
Councilmember Sullivan, did you have a question or not?
Just a comment. I wanted to applaud Mr. Horadic for managing a sustainable sanitation fund, and I just think that's great that you can save money to buy the trucks that we need. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's a point of pride for me too.
And I'd like to move to approve the purchase of one gas V8 4x2 and one gas V8 4x4 pickup truck from Don Sanders Ford for the recycling department for a total cost not to exceed $66,510.54.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Horadic.
Thank you.
I did.
Without objection from the council, I'm going to move item number 19, the city manager's report. Next.
Mayor and Council, you should have a copy of the general fund summary year to date. 50% of the year elapsed. One of the things I wanted to point out. A couple of items just to hit some of the highlights of where we are. On the revenue side, total taxes year to date are down $133,000. Specifically, city sales tax down $202,000. Bed taxes up $16,800. State sales tax is up $9,483. Vehicle tax is down $11,556. Property taxes are up $54,760. Also on the revenue side, under total charges for services, it's down $41,000. Franchise fees specifically is down $14,000. Ambulance fees are also down $24,000. Also, another item, item number three, under legal, our legal expenses are up $15,000. As you know, we've been dealing with some of the issues associated with some of our projects that needed a little bit a higher level of effort from legal. And finally, number four, fire expenses are up $70,000, increased budget, FY15 building maintenance 50% to address many, many, many years of just kind of decrepit conditions within the fire department and the structures themselves. So that's that one. Also, I wanted to let you all know there's a public information session in Bakerville on January the 29th. At 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock here at City Hall. In support of our library, we're having a chocolate tasting at Central School, if I'm not mistaken, on February 14th from 6 to 9. In the library, they're upgrading. There's a system migration that will help, kind of improve the efficiency of their operations. And that is taking place right now. And as I'd already expressed, on February 3rd, I received confirmation today from Barbara Fleming, who's the HR director over in Sierra Vista, who is on the task force for PSPRS by way of the League of Arizona Cities and Towns, and they are committed to coming over February the 3rd to give us a more higher-level overview of kind of where we are, what our condition, what our conditions are as it relates to PSPRS at this time. So with that, Mr. Mayor, that's all I have.
Thank you. Item number 18, discussion of possible approval of a motion to go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.031 for consideration of continuance for legal services with Ancaro PLC as city attorney. Do we have a motion?
I move that Mayor and Council go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.031 for consideration of continuance for legal services with Ann Carl, PLC, as city attorney.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously. We're now in executive session. Second. To come out of the executive session. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion, the ayes have it. The motion carries unanimously. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. This meeting is adjourned.